You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Yakuza! Yakuza! Yakuza Kick Radio! Anyone listening? Anyone listening? Knock, knock! Listen, listen! This is Sammy Callahan, and you're listening to him on Yakuza Kick Radio! You better all listen!
Yakuza Kick Radio!
Yakuza Radio!
Yakuza Kick Radio!
Yakuza Kick Radio!
Yakuza Kick Radio!
That's Yakuza Kick Radio!
Yakuza Kick Radio!
Well, this is Mr. Insanity, Toby Fine, and if you're not listening to Yakuza Kick Radio, then you're weird. Boom.
All you had to do was listen to Yakuza Kick Radio, but you didn't. Now look at that guy, you homie. Fuck that. Black D, out.
My name is Justice Payne, and you are listening to Yakuza Kick Radio.
And you are listening to Yakuza Kick Radio, the best in internet wrestling radio, period, bar none, just like Adam Cole.
Yakuza Radio, love the name, Yakuza.
Yakuza Kick Radio has risen from the ashes of bad internet radio and become the premier place for any independent professional wrestler to stop and record their voice.
Jerry Cat and fucking Eric Worms cannot fucking keep this from the public, that they are fucking dyed-in-the-wool, true blue fucking members of fucking Cult Fiction, and motherfuckers need to keep that shit in fucking mind.
But you go to the back, and you tell your boss that there's a new Yakuza in town. That's Yakuza Kick Radio, and we're taking over.
J-Cat Morris and Eric Williams, your hosts of Yakuza Kick Radio.
Yakuza Kick Radio. Yakuza Kick Radio. Yakuza Kick Radio.
Welcome to the Yakuza Kick Radio Christmas Extravaganza. This is Thursday, December 22nd, 2011. I'm your host, J-Cat Morris, and with me is Eric the Misfit Toy Williams and Stan the Polish Hammer Pinkowitz. What's going on, guys?
What's up?
I figured I'd spice up the intro a little bit for you guys on this Christmas week.
Good.
So, how you guys doing?
Fantastic. How you doing, Jay? Eric, how you doing?
So I'm doing hey, this is like the bright side of the day so far. I fucking had the fucking car die on me. My dad getting a car accident. It's not been a good day, but hey, I got Yakuza Kick, so hey, that's the best part of the evening.
Yes. But yeah, man, Christmas week, we're going to do real big with this big Christmas special. You know, Christmas is about a lot of things. You know, it's obviously... You know, people talk about the presents, it's, you know, the big, the lights, the whole hoopla, you know, it's also definitely about family, and it's, you know, very, very big surrounding the children, so, of course, we don't want any children listening to the show, but it's, you know, it's mostly for the children, and then, you know, of course, you know, the background of it, it's definitely, you know, 100% all about...
Jesus!
So, you know... Beyond that, that's what it is. We're going to do this for you guys. Hopefully uplift some Christmas spirit around this bitch. So, well, I figure what we're going to do to start the show off is we'll do some football. We'll do that football thing, and we'll get that out there. And well, I mean, before I get into, you know, this coming week's picks, I believe there's some things we have to talk about this past week's games. A lot of big surprises to some people, you know, some 49ers. Not as much to others. Well, we'll get into that. You're jumping the gun. You know, well, I mean, one of the first things I wanted to talk about, because I actually heard an interview earlier in this week with a certain superstar in the WWE, and he had some statements that I thought was pretty funny, but I'll play some little background music for this topic. So, my first topic I'd like to talk about is Mr. Tim Tebow. You know, this guy got quite a streak going for himself. This week he ran into an actual, full-fledged quarterback in Tom Brady. You know, not head-on, but what can you do? Mr. Tebow, he went out there, got sacked 4 times. One of these sacks I watched, man, and this guy got sacked for like 25 yards. Like, he just kept running backwards. I don't know what he was doing. He was trying to make magic. It didn't happen, you know? He might have took the knee a few times getting up, but I didn't see too much of that celebration. What can you do? CM Punk went on a radio interview, and he actually said, they brought up Tim Tebow and Jesus, and he said, that's the thing that bothers me about Tebow. He said, if he was so into Jesus and Jesus loved him so much, maybe he'd teach him how to throw a spiral. And then he said, yeah, that's good, you're into Jesus and all that, but, you know, I just can't believe that Jesus would say, you know, I'm going to make you look like you have no idea how to throw a football, but I'll let you win. So, I don't know. That's it cracked me up just because I love CM Punk and, you know, Tebow is Tebow. But what do you think, Stan, about Tebow and his final hitting the wall?
Oh, hit in the wall. I mean, he put up points. The defense didn't help him too much this week against New England. I honestly, and I put it on my Facebook page, Tebow is starting to grow on me. I watched that stupid thing on ESPN, and, you know, he's starting to grow on me. And that last sack, I did see that because I did watch most of that game. That definitely looked like one of my favorite plays in Tecmo Bowl. When you just run back, but he never broke it and never chucked the runner. That was a pretty ugly sack. I think it actually was tied a NFL record, it tied a Denver Broncos record for 27-yard sack loss. But listen, Tim Tebow still is winning with a team that wasn't winning when he wasn't quarterbacking. So I still have to give some love for Tim Tebow, and I hope the Broncos make the playoffs and make a little bit of a run.
Yeah, God willing. God willing. What do you think, Eric?
Well, last week on the show, you know, Stan said the same thing about, you know, how Tebow's growing on him and shit like that. You knew that this moment was going to happen when, you know, people again questioned Tebow, you know, his playing abilities. But hey, you know, he's winning, you know. They played a great New England team, you know.
Yeah.
If he could have beat New England, I would have been like, holy, I would have been like, wow, like, you know.
Right.
If he beat New England, they're putting him,
you know,
that's putting Denver right there, you know.
I mean, Jesus had a birthday coming up and stuff like that. He had a lot of stuff on his calendar. So, I mean, he could have just, you know, forgot the game was on. He could have had other plans on Sunday. I don't know. But
did anybody watch the Saturday Night Live skit?
No.
Anybody watch Saturday Night Live anymore? They did a very, very funny Tim Tebow skit where Jesus actually came down to the Denver Broncos locker room and explained to Tim Tebow and his teammates that he's only there for the fourth quarters. And that's why the team plays so terribly. And that he was a little busy this week, and that Tom Brady actually, if he's the son of Jesus, then Tom Brady might be his brother. It was one of the few Saturday Night Live skits that's been funny in years. So it was very good.
All right. Well, enough about Tebow. Another thing was a huge shock to a lot of people, and really not to me, because, you know, it's like I told Mr. Hellaware Assassin, because he said, you know, the Packers lost, the mob was in on it to make them lose. And I said, yeah, you know, the mob of retards in green jerseys who thought that they were never, ever going to lose a game. That's the mob that was in on that. I personally, this is why I don't think this, you know, I seen people calling it the bizarro week of the NFL, and everything was going to go the opposite way, and, you know, this, the Indy got a win, and Green Bay got a loss, and it's like, well, listen, I mean, you can't win them all, and you can't really lose them all. I mean, you can on both sides, but it's not that common. So one team was due to win, one team was due to lose. It just doesn't shock the shit out of me. I don't know if it's the, you know, the coming of the apocalypse. I don't know if it's, you know, any of this shit that people are talking about, but I don't know, man. I've seen a Packer team that has scraped out wins against, you know, Minnesota and a couple other teams that aren't so stellar. I mean, they're wins in the end of the day, but, man, I don't know. I thought they were really due for a loss, and, then, you know, they finally caught it. So, I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
Well, this was the week, if you watched any ESPN or NFL Network, that cliches came out like crazy with the Any Given Sunday. This is why they play the games. On paper, this team should have won. You know, anything can happen. The ball doesn't always bounce the way you think, and every other cliche that they use. It happens every year, though. Kind of like you said, it's very uncommon for a team to be like the Patriots or them 72 Dolphins.
Yeah.
There is a big mystique about this this mob that apparently lives in Miami, or a bunch of gangsters that make this happen every single year. Again, Florida is a bunch of retired Italians from New Jersey and New York, so you never know.
Right.
But they do talk about that every time this happens. And I tell you what, I'd start putting on some money as soon as I meet some of these guys from Miami.
Yeah.
They seem to be able to make it happen almost every year.
Yeah. You know, and Indy catching a win. I mean, again.
Anthony Missionary Thomas is pissed off right now for that crap.
Well, they're sucking for luck, and I think they've sucked just enough to make it happen. I don't know.
Well, the big news out of this week, and we all knew it, but they just officially announced it. Peyton Manning's not going to play another at all this year.
Oh, really?
But we knew that.
Expected him to rise from the ashes on the last week of the season. Jesus.
They're like, we're going to lead this team to a win.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Well, anyway, obviously, you know, the other game that I definitely have to address quite a bit would be, you know, them boys over
San
there.
San Francisco.
Now, for those that know, you know, listen to the show recently, and, you know, anyone who knows me or Stan knows it, I'm a diehard Niners fan. Stan's a diehard Steelers fan. So this was a huge, huge week, huge challenge on our end, you know, us without Pat Willis. And, you know, they had some guys out of the game, and they had a, you know, a limping Roethlisberger or whatever. But, you know, okay, well, I have to read this piece of literary genius beforehand. I was sent a masterpiece message prior to the game by my friend Stan, and it read like this. This is about to get real for 69ers. Fuck Alex Smith. Fuck earthquakes. Fuck trolleys. Fuck John Stamos. Fuck Jerry Garcia. Fuck bags. Fuck Patty Willis. To which I responded, oh, okay, LOL. Well, you know, then we're all hyped up. Obviously, you know, this is just, you know, everybody getting ready. Everybody can't wait for this game and everything else. And, oh, man, I'm fucking hyped. And I'm just going to let it be what it be, you know. Shit, I know we're playing a tough team. That stands obviously confident. And we're all ready. It's about game time. Next thing you know.
Lights out, niggas.
Fucking stadium goes black. You see the big fucking flash in the left corner of the screen. The fucking transformer blew up. Jesus Christ. So now we got to fucking wait on the edge of our fucking seats. Like, holy shit. Oh, man. And never seen anything like that before. And I just, it was pretty fucking nerve-wracking. You know, sitting there like, oh, what happened? What do they do? You know, back and forth with other people on the internet. Like, oh, I don't know. I've never seen this shit before. And like, oh, fuck. Like, pretty crazy stuff. Well, I mean, going into the game, I mean, we came out looking pretty good. You know, picked off the first two drives. I mean, we were only to make 3 points out of both of those, but we have had a hard time in the red zone and, you know, closing the deal. We drive up the field pretty fucking fluently, and then we get into the red zone, we do have a little bit of troubles. fortunately, our defense is our that's our blood, and that's honestly the reason why I think we are true contenders. Because just like the Ravens team that won the Super Bowl, as painful as that may be for Stan to hear again, but we're a defensive based team. Even without our defensive leader, we came out there and we proved that. And I thought we did a great job. Dude, I think the big problem on the Pittsburgh side definitely is, my opinion, and you know, I heard other people say it too, I'm not a genius, but Roethlisberger is not a stand-and-throw quarterback. So placing concrete on that guy's feet for the whole game and not allowing him to do the scrambling that he does so well to make plays at, I think that's a big problem. And shit, I don't know. That's most of, you know, what I got to say about it. I'm really, really happy to get the win and all of that. And, yeah. So, what do you think about this game, Stan?
Well, you're right. Roethlisberger's one of his main weapons is to scramble. And there are also a lot of times a little bit of a design scramble. There's a lot of Steelers plays that are what would be a seven-step drop and, you know, maybe a little bit of freelancing or street ball or the old Brett Favre style of draw it in the sand and kind of go is definitely in play. And when you make him a stand-up quarterback like that and just a three-step drop or a five-step drop, one thing, it's not his style. It's also not the play-calling style, which definitely hurts. It's not something they do all the time. So you're throwing a whole new playbook in there. One thing I have to say, and I didn't watch a ton of 49er games, but that defense is a terrific defense. Terrific against the run. I think the 49ers, if they can get into a sloppy game against New Orleans or Green Bay, they have a shot with that defense. They're going to have to put six up when they get into the red zone. That field goal stuff isn't going to fly against the Green Bay or New Orleans. But they move the ball well on a defense that is good, minus Harrison and minus Woodley for the second half. Still a good defense because they still won big games without both of those players early in the season when James Harrison fractured his eye socket and Woodley had the hamstring injury. So that defense still played well throughout the season without those guys, and the 49ers moved the ball. I was impressed with the 49ers. I was unimpressed with Roethlisberger's play, but I have to say I was impressed with his wanting to stay out there even though the game was over just to finish it. it was a good game. You know, I think it was quite terrible how many times that the power went out for whatever reason.
Yeah,
that was great. I think you guys paying that bill because that'd be nice. No, not quite ready for prime time over there for the 49ers and the whole organization, but they did what they could. That's what I got.
Yeah. Now I hear you, man. It's crazy, you know. Again, I'm really fucking proud to beat the Steelers. They're a fucking high caliber team, so you know to go in there and beat those guys, I'm fucking proud of that. I, you know, I felt the same way. You know, we beat the fucking Lions when they were undefeated, and you know, I knew a few Lions fans on the Facebook and shit. And I talked shit after the game because, you know, going into the game, it was like, well, fuck, man, you guys have clearly proven yourself. There, everybody's talking about you guys. We scraped together some wins, and you know, somehow every time we play another, you know, big team, it's like, well, let's see if they're real. Like, Jesus Christ. I mean, how many wins you got to put together to be some kind of, you know, it didn't come out of nowhere. I mean, yeah, we got a shit division, but we also played some pretty big teams and beat most of them, quite honestly. I mean, we lost to Dallas, and that was a game that, you know, we really gave away. And, you know, the Ravens just plain out beat us. We got into a defensive battle with us. They put up some late points, and you know, we couldn't close in the red zone as, you know, often happens with us, but I don't know, man. You know, we got beat by Arizona. It was kind of like that sleeper game, and plus, you know, first game without Pat Willis in the game, so you know, it kind of caught us off, but you know, I don't know. I think we can make some kind of run. Like you said, you know, we get into a scrappy game with somebody, you know, but thing is, you know, I know a lot of it's a point race when it comes down to your Green Bays and your New Orleans and this and that, but we haven't allowed teams to really put those points on us, so I guess we got to see what happens when they get in there, you know?
Absolutely.
It is a points race to a point, but with that defense, if you guys can hold them to under 24 points, you got a shot. Because
yeah.
Their defenses are not good defenses, so you'll be able to put up that 24-point mark. It's going to be on your defense still. It's not going to be, you know, holding the team to 3 points, 6 points, 9 points. You're not going to do that with Green Bay or New Orleans.
No.
There's no shot. But if you can, again, if you can hold them to 24 points, you definitely have a shot.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm happy about. And I've noticed a lot with my team is what they're doing is, like, they're doing what they can on offense. They're holding the team at bay for the most part. They might put up some points here and there, but they hold them at bay, and eventually the defense breaks. And that's when you get, you know, the defense breaks some plays, whether it's an interception, a fumble or something, and all of a sudden the field position is in our favor. And as long as we held them, like, within range, it's back, like, our ball game again. And that's what I've been really happy about. A lot of times it's like back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. They get frustrated. They throw into, you know, coverage or something, and, man, guys are on it. So
the one thing I hope for your red zone offense is that Harbaugh gets a little more creative. It takes a little bit more risk. He seems to be, to me, and again, I haven't watched a ton of 49er games. You would know this better. But he seems
right.
to be very, very vanilla, very book in, okay, first and goal on the 7, run, pass. And,
right.
You know, maybe a little play action, which he did later in the game. That touchdown to Vernon Davis, I believe it was.
Right.
You know, that was a first down play. You know, a little bit more of that, it keeps the defense on their heels a little bit. When you're going in there, run, pass, you know, NFL defenses, if they know you're running 95% of the time on first and goal, they're going to stop that.
Yeah.
So.
Well, he definitely does have it in him to mix it up. I mean, earlier in the season, he actually pulled some trick play, and he fucking threw it to a lineman. Like, he pulled a lineman out and fucking threw him a screen pass. And, like, it was, like, crazy shit. Like, he does have it in him, but I don't know. He is a little conservative at times. And for whatever reason, I don't know what it is that we hit a wall once we get into that short field. And, you know, I guess we'll have to work it out. We'll see what happens. But, anyway, I figure we'll get into these picks. I don't even know what the score of this game is tonight, but would not shock me to know that Houston's winning.
Houston was winning.
That's shocking.
I'm pretty sure it's 10-3 still.
10-3. Oh, anyway, you know, game underway or whatever. Houston at the Indianapolis Colts, the one-win Colts, the Houston Texans. I always want to say Oilers. The Houston Texans are favored by 6.5 points, and I took Houston. Who you guys
I took
got?
Houston. I took Houston as well.
All right.
Yeah, 6.5. You go with Houston for less than a touchdown. I went with Houston.
All right. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, any team with one win is really hard to put your confidence behind to say, well, we're on a roll now. Let's go. Okay. Broke the ice. Let's move. Next up. You got the Cleveland Browns at the Baltimore Ravens. And the Ravens are favored by 13.5 points. Who you got?
I'm going to go with Cleveland. Just, again, division rivalry, 13 points, 13.5, whatever. A lot of points in the division rivalry. And in the last couple of weeks, we've seen how those late division rivalry games have went. I'm not saying Cleveland's going to get the win, but we just had the Redskins over the Giants. We just had the Browns cover against the Steelers. So I'm going to go with the Browns just for the high points in the division rivalry game.
Well,
right,
now, you know, you say about the rivalry game, but, like, it's also a division game as well. So, but in division-wise, Cleveland hasn't won a game this year in the division, whereas Baltimore hasn't lost a game in the division. But I'm going to go with Cleveland. I think, you know, like I said, point-wise, I think they'll, you know, 13.5 is a lot, but, you know, Baltimore 10-4. They already made the playoffs. You know, so they don't really need this win as bad as they do. I mean, maybe clinch, you know, first round bye or, you know, home field advantage here at the playoffs. But
okay, so
I gotta say, between you and Jay putting down the team that you're gonna pick, it makes my head spin.
So you're picking who now, Eric?
I'm going
All
Cleveland.
Right. Well, I'm going Baltimore. I was under the the thought that they were actually needing this game. And I'm guessing not, but I thought, like, position-wise in the playoffs, it was actually kind of important. So,
They already clinched the playoffs. I'm just saying, I mean, like I said, I mean, they could either clinch it, you know, they haven't clinched the division yet, but, and they haven't clinched home field, but, like I said, they made the playoffs. So it's like, and they're going to get a home game regardless, because, I mean, we'll, you know, they'll make some type of, you know.
Right. What's that, Sam?
Baltimore is the 2 seed right now. Houston's also 10-4, so Baltimore does have to win to keep pace with Houston, but they do have the head-to-head win this year. They beat Houston earlier in the year, so if both teams went out, then Baltimore would be the 2 seed.
Now, you're a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, and Pittsburgh's also 10-4, but how does that make, I mean, how does that make Baltimore over Pittsburgh when they both have the same record? What does it come, I guess that comes down to with the first
head-to-head. Head-to-head.
Okay,
head-to-head,
so it's a head-to-head.
Yeah, and I hope you did it just to mess with me. Baltimore has beaten Pittsburgh 2 times. and that's why.
Should I play the crying song again or no?
Yeah.
Okay.
and also, I believe Houston has the head-to-head over Pittsburgh also. So at this point, Pittsburgh would need Houston to lose twice. That's not going too well tonight, and Baltimore to lose. I'm sorry, both teams to lose once and for Pittsburgh not to lose for them to be the 2 seed. Still possible. Right. Definitely still possible.
All right. Well, next up, you have Tim Tebow and the Denver Broncos playing a not-so-Tom Brady-ish quarterback in Buffalo, and Tebow's favored by 2.5. So is the rest of Denver, but Tebow is favored by 2.5 over there. I'm going to go with God's boy this week and hope, you know, his birthday doesn't surpass him looking after his son.
Dan, you want this first?
Go ahead, Eric, go ahead.
Okay, well, Denver 8-6, and on the road they're 5-2. They're playing Buffalo 5-9, but Buffalo has has an all right home record at 4-3. And like I said, Denver is pretty much the number one in the AFC West. You know, with Oakland at 7-7 and San Diego at 7-7, I think Denver, you know, bounces back and gets the victory.
All right.
Denver's going to Buffalo. One of the biggest advantages for Buffalo home field advantage-wise is it could be very cold and it could be snowing. Two things that would play into Denver's favor with them being a running team and having a running quarterback. So that wouldn't hurt them. Denver isn't in the playoffs yet, but they can win the AFC West in two ways this week with a win and an Oakland loss. Or they can tie and have Oakland, San Diego lose. They can also clinch a playoff spot if the Jets lose and the Bengals lose and the Titans lose if they win.
Okay.
So Denver has a ton of ways to get in this week with a lot of losses from other teams.
All right. So your pick?
Denver Broncos.
All right. And you have Eric, you have
Denver
as well. Okay.
Yeah.
Just so you know, Eric, too, I can't see the chat because I couldn't get in at all. So if anyone's saying anything in the chat you'd like to relay, go right ahead. But I'm done playing with this bullshit chat tonight. I'm just gonna do it live. Fuck it.
Yeah, we only got. I'm surprised at this chat room this week. I don't know. Maybe it's going on for, you know, there's problems for every other person, but we only have Brett and Nina. In the chat room. I'm thinking maybe there's problems with the chat room because I guess
it's very possible, but I'm not going to stress it. But anything, you know, you feel the need to relay, go right ahead because I don't give a shit about the chat. So, not the people in there, just the function of it. Anyway, next up, we got the Tampa Bay Bucks taking on the Carolina Panthers. The Carolina Panthers are favored by 7.5 points. What do you got, Eric?
I'm going to go with, it's a division game, NFC South-wise, but both teams are not in any contention for playoffs, so I'm going to go with Carolina.
All right.
Eric's correct. Both teams are mathematically eliminated from the playoffs, and, you know, I watched that Tampa Bay-Dallas game last Saturday,
And it looks like Tampa Bay pretty much quit on their season, quit on their coach. Carolina has not, so I'm going to go with Carolina here.
Funny story I got to tell. So I'm dropping somebody off at their house, and I see a Dallas fan, and they look fucking pissed off. And I didn't even, you know, I didn't watch the game, so I'm like, oh boy, you know, Dallas lost. And then I checked the phone. I'm like,
that's
this guy was
their
fucking
nature.
He was so pissed. He's like, oh, I'm fucking slamming the door. He's like, God damn, that fucking game. And I'm like, wow, Dallas fucking lost. I fucking look at the phone. I'm like, no, they fucking didn't. What a fucking idiot. That was the fucking stupidest thing I ever seen in my life.
All right. Well, that's a Dallas fan for you. I got Carolina as well. Next up, we got Arizona taking on Cincinnati. Cincinnati favored by 4.5 points, and I'm going to go with them Bengals.
Stan, you're about this whole playoffs. You know, you got everything taken care of. Does Cincinnati have a chance to make the playoffs at this point?
Oh, absolutely. Cincinnati is actually right on the doorstep. They're the 7th seed. If the Jets lose, they'd move up into the 6th seed. So they need to win. They're also playing Baltimore the last week of the season. They pretty much need both of those wins or two losses by a lot of teams. But if they hold steady this week and the Giants upset the Jets, or however that is, I don't even know if that's an upset at this point, the Bengals would be in, and you'd have three AFC North teams in there. Arizona is also still in the race here. They need a Giants loss. They need a Seattle loss and a Chicago loss.
And an Eagles loss.
No, the Eagles can only win the division.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the Eagles, the way it works out with this head-to-head nonsense and conference matchups, they can only get in with a we'll get into that later. But they still can get into the playoffs, but it's only as the NFC East winner. So I'm also going with the Bengals here. I think they'll come out. Arizona's a tough team. I think it is going to be close, but I think the Bengals do pull it out by a touchdown to keep this playoff push running over there.
All right. Eric?
I got Cincinnati as well.
All right. Right across the board. Next up, we got the Oakland Raiders taking on the Kansas City Chiefs, and the Raiders are favored by 1.5 points coming off their big defeat of the Green Bay Packers. Who do you guys got?
I got Kansas City.
All right.
Just because I want that AFC West to get real interesting, I'm going to go with Kansas City also. If that happens, then going into the last week, if Denver loses, basically every team has a chance to win the AFC West still. And they all play each other. So I want it to be interesting. I'll go with Kansas City just for rooting interest.
Yeah, I'll go with Kansas City as well, just because I've never really been that impressed with Oakland. Not that I've been that impressed with Kansas City, but coming off beating a team like the Packers, I feel like, you know, you can pull something out of the bag to beat the Raiders. So I'll go with them. Next up, you got the Miami Dolphins taking on the New England Patriots, and the Patriots are favored by 9.5 points. And going to go with the Patriots.
Going to go with the Patriots as well.
All right.
9.5 points, again, division rivalry game is a lot of points. New England still does have to win one more game to secure the first seed or second seed, because Pittsburgh is the only team that can beat them for the one seed. I'm going to go with Miami here, just based off that division rivalry type thing.
All right. Next up, you got the Battle of Jersey. And the New York Giants in Jersey versus the New York Jets in Jersey. And the Jets are favored by 2.5 points at home and away at the very same time. And who do you got, Eric?
I got the Giants.
All right.
Up here, they're making a lot of talk about the Giants being the road team, and how that's going to be very confusing, and how they're not allowed to use their own locker room. Eric, in your opinion, does that would that bother you as a player that you're in your building but you're not allowed in your locker room because you have to use a visitor's locker room and you're wearing the wrong color and all this stuff?
Well,
does that actually bother you, or would you even notice?
I don't think it's that we have to focus on. It's how's the crowd going to be for this game?
It's going to be a pro-Jets crowd, I would hope. I mean, unless that many tickets were sold on eBay for Christmas.
I'm wondering if it's going to be 50-50.
Well, I mean, both teams sell out their season tickets, sell out their stadium, their part of the stadium. So, again, you'd have to sell whatever it holds, 70,000, 35,000 tickets on StubHub and eBay. That's a hell of a lot of tickets. So, I don't know. I think there's going to be a pro-Jets crowd. I know they asked for a green out, but then they're handing out 80,000 or 70,000 white terrible towels, but they're not terrible towels because they're going to the Jets. So they asked for a green out, and then they're going to hand out white towels. I don't think Rex Ryan got the message when he asked everybody to wear green. But, hey, you know, whatever.
Getting back to what you're saying, like, I would be I'd be like, I think it would play a huge part in, like, the psyche, you know, the psyche of a player, you know, being like, hey, what, you know, he's, like, used to, like, a certain way of doing things, you know, and then he's, like, at his own stadium, it's like, wait, he can't, like, that's kind of weird.
It's definitely a little weird. Listen, both teams suck. Both teams get booed all the time, so what's the difference is how I look at it.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to get booed, but they're used to that. They get booed every time they play in that stadium. So, you know. Jay, give me the spread again because I honestly missed what it was.
The Jets are favored by 2.5.
You know what? I'd take the Jets to win by a field goal. Whatever. Terrible game. They're going to build it up like it's something special, and it's just really two teams that are either very good, very bad, and it's actually a garbage game that's getting built up because of the New York thing.
Yeah. Well, all right. Next up, you got the St. Louis Rams taking on the Pittsburgh Steelers, with the Steelers favored by a big 14.5 points. And start off with the Steelers fan. What's going on?
14 points is a ton of points, especially when there's a chance Charlie Batch could be quarterbacking for the Steelers. There is a good chance with what happened Monday with the 49ers win that the Steelers might rest Ben, get the high ankle sprain healed up, put it on their defense to go out there and beat the Rams, and then next week most likely do the same thing, maybe play Ben for a quarter or something like that, keep the arm sharp, and put it on the defense to beat the Browns. 14.5 is a lot of points, but I can't see the Rams scoring against a team that's a defensive-minded team with their head coach and their defensive coordinator telling them this is your game to go win. I can't see them putting up more than 7 points, 10 at most, and I think Charlie Batch can get that offense to score 24 points, and the defense will cause turnovers to give him a good chance and a short field a lot. So I'm going to go with the Steelers, even though it's a high spread.
All right. Yeah, I'm going to go with the Steelers as well. I just tend to think they're going to find a way to pile on after that, you know, tough game against San Francisco. And, you know, only putting up 3 points. They got a bunch of points built up in them. I think they're going to drop on the fucking shitty Rams. So, we'll
see. I'm going to go. I guess that means Pittsburgh across the board.
All right. Next game up, we have the Jacksonville Jaguars at the Tennessee Titans. Titans favored by 7.5 points. And who do you got, Eric?
I got, well, Tennessee, they lost the last two. And Tennessee's still fighting for a playoff spot at 7-7. I'm going to go with Tennessee.
All right. I'm going to go with Jacksonville. I don't know. Something about it, I'm just going to go with Jacksonville on that one. I don't know about Tennessee putting up 7.5, so who knows.
Be honest, it's the X in the last name at the end of the name.
Yeah. Yeah, that's clearly it. There's no X's anywhere else in the NFL. I just got to go over again. Well, Texans, but they're still the Oilers. So, go ahead. What do you got?
Tennessee is alive in this playoff hunt here. They need the Jets to lose and Cincinnati to lose to go into the last week with a shot. 7.5 points. Funny number there. I think a lot of people are going to want to jump on Tennessee. I think that's where that half point comes in. I'm going to go with Jacksonville also, just to keep it less than a touchdown game. I think that's
all
a setup game for Vegas.
Yeah. Next up, we got the Minnesota Vikings taking on the Washington Redskins, with the Redskins favored by 6.5 points. And going to go with Minnesota. I would imagine at this point Adrian Peterson is back in the game. I don't know that for sure, or injury report or any of that stuff, but I think him on his own can do more work than the majority of the Washington Redskins. So regardless of their beating of the Giants past week, I still think Minnesota is going to pull this one out.
Minnesota is mathematically out of the playoffs. Washington is mathematically out of the playoffs. Go on, Minnesota.
All right.
I'll go a little different with you guys. I'll go with Washington. Minnesota does have Adrian Peterson back, and he does play well. They are 2-12, and Peterson hasn't been out for 12 games, that's for sure.
Right.
Washington did play well, beat the Giants. Giants played terribly. It is in Washington, and I think Washington's going to finish strong. I think a lot of players are playing for their jobs for next season.
Oh, that's a good point. Next up, we have the San Diego Chargers at the Detroit Lions, with the Lions at home favored by 2.5 points. Who do you got?
I'll go first here.
Sure.
I'm going to take San Diego, the Superchargers. Maybe they should have came over to San Francisco. They're not too far away, and they could have gave them some Chargers. But their lightning bolts will give them a little bit of power in that stadium.
We have plenty of power. As by night's end, we were full of power.
San Diego is the hottest team in the NFL right now. Especially with that Green Bay loss. But they're just playing lights out right now like they seem to do every December. If they could play that way in September and October, they wouldn't be fighting and scratching and clawing to get into the playoffs every single year, it seems like. I'm going to go with San Diego to hang an L on Detroit and knock them out of that sixth seed over there in the NFC.
I'm going to go with Detroit.
All right. And I'm going to go with San Diego, because I do believe they are hot. Detroit has been so up and down, and they've started to pull themselves back up, but I think it's too late, and they're not going to have the momentum just off of what they just did, and last-minute wins and stuff. And I think San Diego is going to put this one out. So, next up, you got the Philadelphia Eagles against the Dallas Cowboys, with the Cowboys favored by 2.5 points. And I'm going to go with the Eagles.
I'm going to go with the Eagles as well.
That's shocking.
Shocker. Here's one of the coolest playoff scenarios of the week or of the rest of the year here. The Philadelphia Eagles are 6-8. They were written off for dead. They were out of it. No chance, nothing, no shot, everything else. If they beat Dallas this week, the Jets beat the Giants, and then the Giants turn around and beat Dallas next week, and the Eagles beat the Redskins, the Eagles will be the NFC East champions and in the playoffs. It sounds like they need a lot, but if you sit and look at it, it's a very, very real possibility, because there's nothing saying the Jets ain't beating the Giants, and the Giants can take care of Dallas next week, and Eagles just got to win their two games. I like the Eagles here. The Eagles,
I'm telling you right
play,
now, it's gonna be a, there's going to be a lot of scoreboard watching.
Well, something that I believe in is I believe the NFL doesn't fix games as in they pay players or anything like that. But I think they try to work the teams they want into spots that they should be, you know, they think they should be in. You'll see if the NFL wants the Eagles into the playoff game, because you could still flex on week 17 with flex scheduling.
Right.
If that Giants-Dallas game is flexed to 8 o'clock, that means they do not want the Eagles in the playoffs, in my eyes. Because if the Giants already know that the Eagles won, if they beat Dallas, it does them no good but to get the Eagles into the playoffs. So you're taking everything out of that game and giving Dallas an opportunity to be the Giants team that has nothing to play for. If you play both of those games at the same time, if you play them both at 1 o'clock, the Giants still have a reason to go play, because even if they lose to the Jets, if they beat Dallas and the Eagles lose, they're the NFC champs, the NFC East champs. So I think it's very interesting to see where they slot that Giants-Dallas game week 17.
Yeah. All right. Well, next up, you have my boys over there at, Jesus Christ. I lost the mouth fucking thing. There we go.
San Francisco.
Taking on the Seattle Seahawks, who we beat in, I believe, week one. So, playing them real early and real late. And San Francisco is favored by 2.5, and you already know who I got, San Francisco.
Stan, is Seattle still in it?
Yeah, Seattle's the seventh seed in the NFC. They are still in it. They need a lot of help from Detroit or Atlanta. They need both of them to lose two games. Detroit's got that tough matchup with San Diego this week and then plays Green Bay. Green Bay might not be playing for anything, but if Green Bay slips up this week, Green Bay would be playing for could be playing for the number one seed if New Orleans or San Francisco continues to win. Seattle's another hot team right now. San Francisco is only favored by, 2.5, Jay?
Yep.
By 2.5, so, I mean, that's telling you a little something. I think it's going to be a closer game than anybody would expect by looking at the records of 11-3 and 7-7. I don't see it. I'm going to have to go with San Francisco here. Again, playing for that first round bye.
All right.
Going with San Francisco as well.
All right. San Francisco across the board. Love to hear it. Next up, we have the Chicago Bears taking on the Green Bay Packers with the Pack favored by 13.5 points. I'm going to go with Chicago to keep it close. And I don't know. Green Bay, we'll see how they finish out this season.
Going Green Bay.
All right.
Again, Chicago's in that same situation that Seattle is. They need some help. 7-7 also. Need a bunch of teams to lose. Green Bay came off a tough loss, obviously. They're coming into this with two ways to look at it. Now you could start to somewhat rest players, start to build your playoff momentum with the two-game lead. Chicago needs this game. It's they lose, they're out. I like Chicago to keep it close, even though their offense is terrible, but their defense ain't half bad. I like Chicago to keep it close here. I'll go with Chicago.
All right. And the last game of the week, we have the Atlanta Falcons taking on the New Orleans Saints, with the Saints favored by 6.5 points. Who do you got?
I got Atlanta here. Both dome teams, so none of that stuff comes into play, all of that. New Orleans, I think, will win the game, but I think this is going to be one of those very recent Atlanta-New Orleans-type games where it's a 35-31 type game, close, even the last-second field goal-type game, 37-34, in that range, high-scoring, relatively exciting game, but Atlanta keeps it close enough to cover.
All right, Stan, so I'm going to try to play I'm going to try to give you a scenario here. Can Atlanta win the division?
You know what? Atlanta could win the division if New Orleans lost both games.
So wait, Stan, you're going with Atlanta?
Yeah, I'm going with Atlanta.
Okay.
Eric, I don't have it in front of me or nothing, but Atlanta is 9-5, New Orleans is 11-3.
Right.
At worst, if Atlanta won this, they would split. I don't know what happened in that first game of the year.
We'll find out.
But at worst, they would split. At that point, it would go down to strength of schedule, their conference, you know, conference wins. I don't know who has that there, so we're going to have to go with Atlanta has a chance without looking at it. If they were to tie it up with New Orleans, it would go into all those tiebreaker modes. So yeah, Atlanta looks like they do have some.
Atlanta lost against New Orleans.
In
week 10,
if they won here, they'd be 1-1, and then it would go to who has more wins in conference.
Which would come to okay.
All right, I got New Orleans here.
I got Atlanta.
All right, so that's the picks for this week. May or may not be getting a call in a minute or so. We'll have to see how that pans out. But in the meantime, I figure I'll play a little bit of some Peter Griffin. Let me see. Jesus, I had it right in front of me. It's going to be slow with everything I do tonight. That's how I do. There we go.
Everybody, look at the snow in the yard.
And who could forget?
I brought these gifts for you. They're up in my bum.
And everyone's favorite.
La 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 la, la 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 la. Look at the bells, look at the bells. Holy crap, here comes Jesus. And he doesn't look too happy. Merry Christmas, everyone. Guys, this is great.
Yeah, there's a little Christmas spirit brought in by Peter Griffin. So, yeah, man, got a lot of stuff to play for you, and not really sure where to start. Before we get off the NFL thing, let me take a little break and play this gem that was actually Howard Stern had actually brought this to my attention on playing it and saying this guy's got like 3,400,000 hits on this fucking video. And it's a video where he did his own little commentary on Marshawn Lynch's run against the Saints last year. Pretty fucking hilarious, and check it out. New John Madden.
Definition, put the team on my back. One's will to carry the team and not let any obstacle come in between. A desire that you must achieve to go ahead and get that green, if you know what I mean.
What's up, niggas? I'm back. Oh, yeah. Let's get into it, man. All right. Pass it back. Get it bought to Marshawn Lynch. Whoa. Look at this shit. Look at this nigga. Look at this motherfucking beast. Look at this. Whoa. Hold on. Get the fuck out of me, pussy. Oh, shit. Look at this shit. Running. Touchdown. Easy. And Darren Sharper. Hold my dick. Look at this nigga. Look at Drew Brees. Oh, that's easy. Nah, look at Marshawn Lynch. Y'all did that shit for y'all niggas, man. This shit was so nasty. Look at this shit. How the fuck do you get through all these motherfuckers? Look at this shit. Whoa, get the fuck off me, bitch. Pussy. Hey, you little nigga, get off me. Child's play. Look at this nigga, though. I never seen a nigga put his team on the back like this nigga Darren Sharper. Hold my dick. Look at this shit. I gotta do this shit. Fuck Madden. For Seattle right now, for T-Brad, for all them Seahawks, though. No, you can't take me down. You need more than that. Hey, little boy. Little boy. Damn, a Superman, though. Look at this shit, though. So much determination, though. I never seen this before in the NFL, though. A nigga put his team on the back like that, though. Marshawn, I know how you feel, man. Craig, you didn't do the same thing. Shut up, Drew Brees. Easy. Remember, man, you got to put the team on your back, man, no matter what you do, man. I don't give a fuck what you do, man, in life, man. You got to put the team on your fucking back at all times, so, man. Real talk, man. Man, it's like, shit, when you put the team on your motherfucking back, you know what I'm saying? You feel so good, you gotta carry these young niggas to the promised land, though. Like I do. Like Marshawn do. Like Rand Grant do. like Greg Jennings about to do today, dude. Y'all look out for that, dude. It's easy. I'm back.
Yeah. That shit's pretty funny. The other thing about it is...
Clearly, that's the new Howard Cosell, Dick Vitale, Chris Berman, Keith Jackson, and Vin Scully all mixed into one with a little touch of Broke Willie, who roller skates down Main Street every Saturday afternoon looking for a little bit of spare change. Definitely a mix of all of them put together for a little NFL action there.
Right, and it's also the way that my dude Ali plays Madden. That was the same commentary you will get playing Ali in Madden. Right, Stan?
Very true. Very true.
Yep. Good
stuff. There's been many Madden games where I just stopped playing to look at what the hell he was doing because it was much more entertaining watching him play than actually playing against him.
Oh, absolutely. And you got the same intensity coming out of the dude that's standing next to you, pressing the same buttons you're pressing, and somehow it's just energizing the shit out of him. So, gotta love it. Yeah. Well, trying to, you know, stall a little bit if we get that call. We do have the WWE pay-per-view to go into. Do have some other things to, you know, chop up, get into. Definitely want to talk a little bit about the CZW thing in January and the current status of all of that. But first...
Nobody's walking out on this fun old-fashioned family Christmas. No, no, we're all in this together. This is a full-blown four-alarm holiday emergency here. We're going to press on, and we're going to have the happiest Christmas since Bing Crosby tap danced with Danny fucking K. And when Santa squeezes his fat white ass down that chimney tonight, he's going to find the jolliest bunch of assholes this side of the nut house.
That's right. That's what we're trying to bring you tonight. But, anyway, shit. CZW is... most likely, I'm probably going to segment it. If I can go over the card, I will. If I can, I'll come back to it. But they are going to put down, between them and Evolve, the last two wrestling shows in the ECW, CZW, whatever you'd like to call it, arena. I truly believe that these will be the last shows that you see in that building. The reason I say that, too, is because... the owner had actually put out there that she is up to having wrestling shows in that building, but as of February, I believe 2nd, they are doing massive renovations in the building. They are closing the building completely. No one will be working in there in the month of February for sure. They will be ripping out where the locker room was in the arena, so there will be no more backstage area. That is where they will be building their permanent stage for concerts. They will also be, you know, the big balcony area, they'll be ripping that out as well to allow more space to, you know, seat people and everything like that. They're going to be doing a lot of different things that are going to completely just change the face of that building. The building will never look the same after the January shows go down. So there's a lot of stuff going on like that. You know, personally, I think, you know, even though she said she's open to it, open to having wrestling in there, I just don't think it's going to be that feasible. It's now set up for wrestling where you do have your backstage area. You have an ample floor space, which I don't think they're going to lose floor space, but they will lose a backstage area. And I believe once they pour thousands upon thousands of dollars into this building, they're not going to be oh so open to, you know, come bring your barbed wire and your panes of glass and bleed buckets all over the floor. Yeah, mop up before you leave and have a nice night, you know. I just have a feeling like certain things along those lines are going to be frowned upon, which makes it not a great venue for CZW anymore. I believe the face of that, the tolerance towards things are going to completely change, and... you know, you might have your Chikara shows, your Evolve shows, your Dragon Gates, your Ring of Honors, like those type of things, I think might still be able to go there. And CZW might even go in there and press their limits until they get thrown out of the building. I'm not really sure how it's going to turn out, but I would go out there and just my opinion, my guess, is that this will be the last CZW show in CZW form in this building. So that will be... January 14th.
They keep doing this whole, like, Oh, sign a petition type deal.
You could sign all the petitions you want. They're knocking the shit out of the inside of
that
building
waste
come
of time.
February. So, you sign the fucking wall before you leave, and they're going to put a hole in your fucking name in February. That's, but yeah, I'm more or less planning on attending now, even though I did not plan on attending originally. They are putting on a very good card. Very excited to see some of that stuff if I'm able to get there. Honestly, there's really only one reason that would keep me from doing so, and that would be a 49er playoff game, in which case, you know, have a great show, but I can't do it.
Since we're going over the 49ers playoff game would be the only one reason, how about like a cousin's wedding? What would you do there, Jay?
Cousin's wedding?
Yeah.
CZ fucking W.
How about, let's say, aunt's birthday?
CZ fucking W?
Your firstborn's communion.
It's not applicable, but CZ fucking W.
All right. 15th wedding anniversary.
Again, not applicable, but CZ fucking W.
Let's see. Childbirth.
Wow, I'm really not able to give birth to a child, so I'm going to go with CZW.
Funeral of your best friend.
I think he would want me to be at CZW.
So pretty much it's 49ers or CZW.
Hell fucking yeah!
Yeah. I'd go with that. That's fair to say. Well, I don't seem to be getting a call at this moment. So, what I would like to ask you guys is, what is your favorite Christmas movie?
Favorite Christmas movie?
Yes.
Does anybody really have one favorite Christmas movie, or do you have a Christmas movie for each occasion?
You can't really just pick one. That's kind
of
hard.
Well, listen, okay, obviously you guys are having a hard time picking. Let me just, you know, remind you of a great one, and, you know, after this, maybe you guys can come up with an answer. We'll see. Okay, hold on. Here we go. Load that in there, and then,
In the season of Santa, there are two kinds of people. The naughty and the nice.
I got $50 for the first elf that brings me Santa Claus.
Hulk Hogan is Blake Thorne, and he's definitely been naughty. To make his getaway, he's going to make a mockery of the world's most beloved hero.
You have a minute?
Fox, you little brat.
That's him.
But sometimes, the only way you can feel the spirit of Christmas...
Where'd he go?
...is to be hit over the head with it.
Santa!
What? It's showtime.
Now, this confused bad boy is Santa, like you've never seen him before. A bearded basher of bad guys.
Yeah!
A hero with a silly hat. A Robin Hood in red.
Who were those guys anyway?
Oh, they were Mr. Frost.
He's been clearing out the whole neighborhood and no one knows why.
And he's got 3 days to foil a band of evil scientists.
Assemble the team. We're taking the orphanage.
Wait up, Santa hears about this. He'll kick your butt to New Year's.
Santa, you slay me.
Hulk Hogan is Santa with an attitude.
Keep the nothing cookies warm.
Santa with some friends. Santa with a mission.
How are we supposed to get over this?
And most of all, he's Santa with muscle.
They can't start Christmas without me. Can they?
There have been many Santas.
You're not Santa. You're Santa.
But there's only one named Hulk.
Well, all you had to do was knock.
Santa with muscles.
Yeah, so that's an option. Hold on, I do have a call. 1 minute. How you doing? Who's this?
I'm doing all right. I'm wondering how you guys are doing.
Oh, we finally have our guest. What's going on, Larry?
This is not Larry.
This is not Larry.
No, this is not Larry.
Okay, who is this?
This is J-Star from Mayhem Sports.
Yo, AJ, what's going on?
Oh.
Yeah.
Jesus.
I can't believe y'all got to see. At first, I was honored. I'm like, oh, well, I didn't know you guys were expecting me. But, you know, I pop up from time to time. So it's expected.
Okay.
I'm doing quite well.
You know, you're a Philly guy, you know, and we're just talking about this. What's your thoughts on the arena closing for wrestling?
My thoughts on it? Oh, man, I'm kind of saddened by it. It's like a tradition, like, finally ending, you know, and there's no real way to express how this is going to affect, because I don't know how to put it. I'm going to put it to you like that. I really don't know how to put it.
All right.
So, you know, there's no definite answer on how I feel. Because at one moment, I'm like, you know, they need to close down the place. Next one, I'm like, well, damn, they do that. What the fuck is wrestling going to be at? You know? I'm not traveling to Voorhees, New Jersey. It's not me.
Nah, I hear you.
And, like, that whole concert shit, like, fucking, you know, don't they got a million places to fucking run concerts in Philly? Like, why do they need another place?
Of course they do. They don't. They really, you know what, the new ownership is just biased towards wrestling. They feel as though that it's nothing that's bringing in enough money for them. That's why they want to sit up here and get rid of it. But they don't know the history behind it here in Philly, okay? There's so much that goes into wrestling for us Philadelphians. And people are like, okay, you don't live in Philly. You live in the suburbs. But you travel to Philly to see these shows, correct? So it has special meaning, and I talked about this last week on Matt's show, Eric, and I'm putting it to you like this. It makes me bitter on the inside because it's like so many generations have watched wrestling down South Philly that you can't sum that up in the words. You can't. You really can't.
Right.
It's like an overwhelming effect that it takes on people. I mean, I don't know. I really don't know. It's
right.
Just, to me, it's like an excuse to say, you know what, we weren't really too happy with the product, so fuck, get rid of it. No. No. You saw what they did for Transit, correct? He passed. We all know how that happened. It was unfortunate. But you saw how the community came together. It's a staple in the community that needs it. Look how much crime is in the city of Philadelphia. Many people don't want to actually look at it, but you have to. But some people use wrestling as an outlet to get away from it. You don't have that outlet, how you get away from things? You cope with reality with certain things, and many people find that to be wrestling. It hurts me deep down inside. That's why I don't really have the words for it, because now you take away wrestling in this city, which, like I told Matt before, this is a huge staple in Philadelphia. Not too many people look at it that way, but if you go around town and ask people do they know such and such about wrestling, they'll either bring up ECW, TCW, Evolve, or oh man, I know this company too. You know the other company by Dave Sapolsky.
Dragon Gate.
Okay. Yeah, Dragon Gate USA.
Right.
You take that all away. What does that say? It's like you losing the Phillies, the Eagles, the Sixers, the Flyers, the Phantoms. Come on. This is
right.
Like another staple to the city. You can't take the cheesesteak away from Philly and expect us to be fine with that.
All right, man. Well, I have another call waiting on. Very valid point. I'm going to go ahead and put the next caller on. All right. Thanks for calling in.
Sorry, man, my voice fucked up. Juan.
Hey.
All right, so what I missed, man? I know it's been gone for a couple of weeks.
Right, yeah,
I heard about the whole last show in the arena and shit.
Yeah.
So, like, fuck. I don't know what to say about that. That's kind of fucked up. There's a lot of history in that fucking arena, and all of a sudden they want to get rid of it?
Yeah, well, you know. I don't know what to tell you, man. It is what it is. It's really not a decision of anyone that had to do with wrestling to begin with. It's, you know, the building has been bought out by someone who wants to make their own money doing concerts. You know, it's going to be what it's going to be.
I'm just saying, though, wrestling and the arena go together. You just can't just take wrestling out of their fucking arena.
Yeah, but wrestling has been traveling all over the country for as long as wrestling existed. And wrestling is going to exist beyond any building. And, I mean, that's a fact. Of course, the building has a lot of draw, a lot of, moments, and a lot of people are connected to it. But in the same token, you know, life goes on. What can you do?
Yeah, true. All right, what was I say? How about them Eagles, huh? Yeah, destroy the Jets. We're fucking hungry. We're going to get destroyed by the Cowboys. I can't wait.
I hope they're hungry. Isn't the Wing Bowl coming up, or did that pass?
That hasn't happened.
That hasn't happened yet? Well, hopefully they'll be eliminated for the playoffs enough to, be in contention to win the Wing Bowl.
Yeah, we're going to get destroyed by the Dallas.
Yeah, man, you got Japanese people, fucking 8 in the morning, eating chicken wings, drunk people. Fantastic. That's the bowl you guys are in this year.
That's Puerto Rican people, too. We like chicken in the morning.
Well, yeah. Yeah, chicken, yeah. It's like a Ludacris album in fucking Philly every year. Chicken and beer. You know?
Yo, you supposed to have a guest on, too?
We may. I don't know. I thought, you know, guest was calling in before. I was wrong. You know, what happens?
Where's little bitch Mondo at? What happened to that?
Oh, no. He was on last week. See, you say you listen every week. You sure as shit don't.
We did an hour with him. Listen, I was working. I finally found a job and shit.
Oh, well, congratulations. But we have this thing called an archive, and you can listen to all of our shows afterwards.
You still pushing the archives?
It's on, like, you know, an hour after the show happens.
You still pushing the archives, though?
What do you mean you still pushing archives? We did the fucking show, and you didn't listen to it. What's your deal?
See, wait a minute. Now, you said you were Puerto Rican, right, Juan?
Yes.
And you said that you were working last week, right?
No, I started working because I wasn't working for a while, you know. And I finally got a call and work at Freehold Toyota.
Okay. So you were working when the show was on last week?
Yes, I was. That's why I started working.
Gotcha.
Okay. So were you working at Toyota?
Yeah, Freehold Toyota.
Are there any sexy cars on that lot? Because I know you like to post pictures
of
cars
and
start coming onto them on the Facebook.
I'm waiting for the Scion FSR to come out.
Did you find any jizz in the tailpipes out there yet?
Yeah, right in the window. I thought it was boobs.
Jesus Christ.
No,
I don't get you, Juan.
So I stand on top of the hood and shoot one off.
Yeah, need the windshield wipers for that shit. I don't know, man. I don't know. Juan, what are you gonna do?
I'm just happy. I'm
fucking
working
leather seats
again,
up. I know that much.
Huh?
Are you gonna fuck them leather seats up? I know that much.
No, I don't like leather seats in general anyway.
The cloth seats hold up the jizz better.
Yeah.
Okay. Fantastic. What else you got, Juan?
I don't know, man. I've been trying to catch up with wrestling and shit, but I always come home and be fucking tired as hell.
I know, right?
I see indies on top, though, with CM Punk in there and Brian Danielson.
Oh, I thought you
shit.
Meant indies fucking winning the game right now. Like,
I'm talking about indies on top. Like, you see CM Punk with the WWE title, Brian Daniels with the world title finally.
Yep.
But they're talking about they might they take that shit from them. They may make it a short run. Like, come on.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk about that. And quite honestly, you know, I mean, when you seen that picture and you had CM Punk, you had Bryan Danielson, Cody Rhodes, Zack Ryder, but I'm not going to talk about that. You had Air Boom, and you had... Yeah, fuck you. And then you had fucking Beth Phoenix. I mean, that is a fucking... That is a nice set of fucking champions right there.
I mean, think about it. We got Beth Phoenix came from Simmers. CM Punk, Bryan Danielson came from ROH.
Right.
Cody Rhodes, I think he was an OVW.
Yep.
Yeah,
came from Dusty Rhodes. Dusty Rhodes' balls.
Sure, they are. But Dusty Rhodes is an ugly ass dude, man. Like, what the fuck? He's old.
Yeah, I'm just going history.
No, but I'll say Indies on top. We see Beth Phoenix. She came from Simmers and shit. You know, that women's promotion, Simmers.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, we got ROH, Daniel Bryan, and CM Punk. Yo, the setup was nice, but I don't know about, you know, they should give the internet title, really, to Zack Ryder. They should make that a legit title.
Oh, fuck that guy. Hey, what's your favorite Christmas movie, Juan?
Oh, my favorite Christmas movie. Holy shit, I got a lot of them, dude. I like Rudolph. Oh, Frosty the Snowman. I'm talking about the you know, the fucked up ones from the, like, 60s.
The fucked up ones?
You know, like the original ones, not the remakes. I'm talking about the original. They all, like, stiff as hell when they're walking.
Okay.
The Christmas Story, too. Like Elf.
The Claymations? Is that what you're talking about?
Nah, it's not like, it's like, sound like a claymation, but they're, like, walking super stiff. Like,
yeah, kind
you know
of
that
like Gumby
like,
used to?
Huh?
Kind of like Gumby used to?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the claymation. That's what they do.
Yep.
Yo, is that Eric? Eric sounds
yeah,
different.
That's Stan.
No.
Where's Eric at?
He's there.
Right here.
Stop
right
fucking
there.
With your vibrator, dude. I mean, damn.
Right
I'm
there.
Not
you,
fucking
that. You can't see him over there? He's right there.
Oh, yeah, in the corner? Yeah, I see him.
You can't, okay,
fuck
yeah,
you,
he's
Eric.
Right there. Jesus Christ. You know, he went against your Eagles a couple weeks ago. I do remember that quite clearly.
No, I did not. No, I didn't.
Yeah,
that was
yeah.
a long time ago.
Oh, it was only a couple weeks ago. I do remember that.
Fuck you, Eric.
You know? But anyway, you know, I was saying about, you know, movies, I guess. You know, I'll just keep you on while I play another preview of a movie because, you know, I'm trying to just, you know, refresh people's memories of the fantastic Christmas movies that have been given to us throughout the years.
Holy shit,
you know,
that's
just,
right. Oh, Brent just said National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Oh, well, that's a classic. Definitely.
Holy shit. Yeah, that's
that
one
might be my
top.
Pick. But then you got to start thinking about this movie. Check this out, everybody. And, you know, just hush up and listen to the promo, and then, yeah, we'll be right back.
Grandpa, I want the truth about Christmas.
If it's the truth you want, then it's the scary truth you're going to have.
According to the Book of Claus, Santa, Satan's only son, lost a bet and was forced to spread Christmas cheer. Now, all bets are off.
Yes, there is a Santa Claus. Ho, ho, hoes.
Santa Claus is not a myth or a legend. He's real. Only he's not bearing gifts and presents anymore.
Christmas can sure scare the dickens out of people.
Very educational.
I'm just trying to spread little Yuletide fear.
Are you saying Santa is offing everyone who's naughty and nice?
Nicholas shot him!
You shot Santa?
Get away! Santa's on the loose!
This holiday season.
Ho, ho, ho!
Lock your doors. Bolt the windows.
grandpa got run over by a reindeer.
Everyone stand back. Things are about to get a little messy.
And block the chimney. Cause naughty or nice, Santa Claus is coming to town. Santa's sleigh.
Go ahead, kid. Let's see what Santa got you.
I hate children.
Yeah. You know, who could forget about Santa's sleigh starring Bill Goldberg? I mean, you just, that's one of those things that holds a special place in my heart every time the Christmas season rolls around.
I forgot how much Goldberg was a douche.
Oh, man. You know?
Holy shit. He was arrogant as shit, too, yo.
Oh, you just can't beat Bill Goldberg killing people on Christmas.
God. I remember there was one movie they banned from the U.S. It was, like, in the 80s. Like, they boycotted it and everything because it was, like, Santa Claus killing everybody. It was like a horror Christmas movie. But it came out on Christmas, but it never made it, like, into DVDs and all like that.
Ah. So it didn't come out?
It came out in theaters, but never ever came out, like, you know, on video, on VHS.
Fucking bullshit!
I don't know, man.
So, yeah, I got a question, though. WWE Network is coming out with that reality show with the legends and shit. They said there's going to be one of the people in the house.
Oh, Sheik's going to be in the house, huh?
Holy shit. I want to hear him say that, too.
Yeah. Oh,
if they let him go, like, let him, like, actually do, like, actually, like, ghetto-ass Sheik, that show's going to be a hit.
Hey, I'm talking, don't fucking interrupt me.
Yes, definitely. Yes, the Sheik is very, very entertaining. And I would, you know, one other guy I would definitely, definitely love to fucking see in that fucking house.
Wake up, sleeping fucking beauty!
You know, by all means.
Yeah, I would imagine, like, what kind of fuck conversation, like, the Sheik and the Warrior would have.
Oh, you could never... You'd have to see it. You'd have to see it to believe it. I think it could be pretty fucking substantial. Got anything else, Juan?
No, I don't. I always say fuck you, Eric, you fucking bitch.
Wow. That's,
wow,
spread some holiday cheer. It's, good to hear from you, Juan, and you go ahead and have a...
Yeah, have a good holiday. Yeah, Eric, fall down some steps, motherfucker.
Yeah, happy holidays. All right.
Guys.
Good night, Juan.
Right.
Yes. Yep. Well, there was Juan spreading some Christmas cheer. He's big and jolly, and, you know, he brings some nice things to the table. So, all right. You guys come up with a favorite Christmas movie yet? I mean, I've put out such classics for you guys.
A Christmas Story?
Christmas Story.
Do you watch that for 24 hours on TBS on whatever, Christmas
no,
Eve or whatever?
No, absolutely
up?
Not. Nope.
You definitely make sure you're going to sit. No.
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
I will watch one playing of it, but I won't leave it on for the 24 hours.
I'm not a big fan of Christmas Story.
I'm not a huge fan of it. But there is something, like, when you're opening presents and background noise, not too horrible. The Seamus lookalike, the young Seamus that's in there, you know, the guy with the yellow eye, he's, you know, that part I like to watch. That makes me laugh. I'm gonna have to go with Jingle All the Way.
Oh, that was awesome.
Yeah, that's definitely a classic as well. Definitely. That's so many good lines from that. I don't know which one I would even go with first. Definitely a favorite of mine and many others.
Put that cookie down!
You know, just pretty good stuff, man. I personally, I got to go with the National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. That's just so much fucking classic, and you know, something like this just comes to mind.
And I want to look him straight in the eye, and I want to tell him what a cheap, lying, no-good, rotten, four-flushing, low-life, snake-licking, dirt-eating, inbred, overstuffed, ignorant, blood-sucking, dog-kissing, brainless, dickless, hopeless, heartless, fat-ass, bug-eyed, stiff-legged, spotty-lipped, worm-headed sack of monkey shit he is! Hallelujah! Holy shit! Where's the Tylenol?
That's Christmas right there. Oh, yeah.
Gotta love it. Is Home Alone a Christmas movie?
I said, yeah, it's held around Christmas, and, you know, there's hijinks and snow. I would think so. There was definitely a lot of Christmas music, and, yeah, it was definitely Christmas time. You know, they left for Christmas and left a little fucking stupid kid behind, and now he has no career. See what happens.
Yeah, bam.
The robbers get thrown downstairs, they'll have somewhat of careers, at least one of them. And, you know, Macaulay Culkin, surprising that he's not dead yet. So.
It's a Wonderful Life. Is that a movie that's now pretty much dead, like kind of like Gone with the Wind? Like nobody's going to really sit down and watch that anymore?
Yeah, it's a little slow on my end, you know. I don't like this tug on the heartstrings bullshit. You know, I just can't do it.
You'd rather a paint can straight to Joe Pesci's face.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, who wouldn't? I mean, I think Joe Pesci would rather paint cans to his face than watch some of that shit. I don't know. That's just my opinion. Let me see. How about, well, I guess we'll go into some WWE in a minute, or maybe I'll go over to CZW card in a minute, but I think before we go back into wrestling, it's only right that we segue between Christmas and wrestling and do a little Christmas caroling with Roddy Piper.
Merry Christmas. I've been waiting for you. You know, Christmas is always my favorite time of year. And I'm glad you're here in my living room to enjoy it. Mrs. Claus must have made the cocoa this year. Now, at Christmas time, we all have our favorite things, but mine is singing Christmas carols. My favorite Christmas carol, I'm a little embarrassed, but the 12 Days of Christmas. I have something special for you, because not only are we all going to do it together, I have the number one fan in the world of the Roddy Piper President Club. His name is Craig. Craig, come on in here.
Hi, Mr. Rowdy. Piper, Mr. Piper.
Roddy. Roddy.
Yeah, Roddy.
You look great. Merry Christmas
Merry
to you.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you for calling me. Can you say hello? Hi. In that night. So what we're going to do is Grandma up? Okay, cool. Now, we're going to sing the 12 Days of Christmas. Okay?
Yeah.
So are you going to start us
yeah.
out?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Just one more time. You did that twice in a row. That was good. Okay.
On the first day of Christmas, Roddy Piper gave to me
a sleeper hole just for you.
Gotta live with more of these.
That's good.
On the second day of Christmas, Roddy Piper gave to me
two nipple tears.
That's gonna leave a mark.
And a sleeper hold for you. Get up. You know, maybe we should just go to the end, because Christmas will be gone by the time we get through the song, and it's so much fun, okay? So get Granny up, and let's, here we go. We'll just start at 12.
On the 12th day of Christmas, Roddy Piper gave to me
12 headlocks, 11 kidney shots, 10 head butts.
Just relax.
9 elbow smashes, 8 uppercuts,
seven low blows. Blah, blah, blah. Six close lines. Five bagpipes. Blaring. Four eye pokes. More. Three chair shots. And a sleeper hold just for you.
Merry Christmas. May all your dreams come true.
So, yeah, that's Roddy Piper beating the shit out of his, the one who runs his fan club through the 12 Days of Christmas. And I'll post the video on the Yakuza Facebook and stuff. And yeah, the video is definitely better than the audio. But either way, you know, hearing so, him. Yeah.
All right. So do you want a real good, you know, gift for us? Nicole's listening, but she can't get in the chat according to Nina.
So nice.
Juan, that's for Juan. That's a Christmas gift for Juan.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah,
oh,
man.
Now Juan's telling me he'll shoot me in the eye.
Oh, that's great. Juan loves you. That's great. He's like your own personal huge Christmas elf.
Hey, real quick before we start talking a lot about anything about wrestling, you do know that Ring of Honor has pay per view tomorrow, right?
Yes, that is.
Okay.
That is the fucking final battle, right?
Yes. Yes.
Right, right. Well, I did want to run down the CZW card real quick, even though it's jumping ahead of what is going on in that. And a couple of the things that are definitely drawing me towards the building is AR Fox taking on UHA Nation. These guys are no fucking stranger to each other. And, you know, yeah, they're going to tear shit up. Awesome fucking match. And, yeah, that's, Stan's, like, ridiculously asking me questions in the fucking, I'm on the air with him and I'm trying to short form answer questions to him and he's, you know, what can I do? Anyway, so yeah, shout out to Nicole, that's, Toby's wife, for those who don't know, Toby Klein is a hardcore wrestler, Tough Crazy Bastards, Mr. Insanity, that's, pretty much where that is. So anyway, what was I saying? They have that. AR Fox versus UHA Nation will be great. Eddie Kingston versus Joker. That'll be a hard-hitting, strong-style battle. Ryan McBride versus Derek Frazier. That's, you know, all right. Yeah, the Bulldozer, Matt Tremont, taking on Drew Gulak, and I really don't know how that's going to end up. I have no idea. You have Azrael and Bandito Jr., defending their titles against the Blackout of Alex Colon and Ruckus. And then you have Sammy Callahan defending his CZW Junior Heavyweight title against Rich Swann. That is going to be the shit. And then you also have Devin Moore taking on Adam Cole for the world title. And I find it really odd that every time someone loses a fucking title, they get a title shot at something else, and it's just the weirdest thing ever. It's like, fucking Gulak lost his Wired title. Next thing you know, he has a world title shot in February, you know, off of winning one match. And then Adam Cole loses his junior heavyweight title in November. Doesn't work in, he doesn't work for CZW in December. And that earns him a January world title shot. I just don't know. I mean, not that there'll be anything wrong with the match or anything like that, but Jesus Christ, that's retarded booking. I have no fucking grasp on that concept. Sorry, I just don't. A Rich Swann being in Japan for all this time still earns him a quicker junior heavyweight title shot than half of this other stuff they're trying to pitch me, because I just don't get it. I mean, that's even more of like a dream match type thing, you know, big card stuff, you know, you know, they'll tear it up. Everybody who knows both of those guys knows they're going to bring it in the match, you know, and not that Cole and Devin won't, but when you clearly have a guy who hasn't won a match in a few months, you really can't turn around and say, okay, well, let's get you ready for that world title shot, buddy. Like, what? I don't really understand that. So, anyway, I don't know what you guys think about that.
That's going to be a good show.
I think so.
Is it, what's the stipulation behind that show? Because I've seen something about Excellent, like Greg Excellence, like booking the show or something. Like.
Yeah, that really doesn't deserve acknowledgement, but if you have to. When Greg Excellent beat DJ, he apparently won like 3 genie wishes or some corny garbage like that. Then his first wish was to run January's show. So, again, it's just fantastic booking. We're like, when you have 3 wishes that you have to be commanded, instead of saying, I'm taking the company over overall, you go, I just want to take over January. Oh, okay, yeah, great. So it's called, like, Excellent Adventure or some silly shit. So Greg Excellent runs one show, and then DJ bitches him in February, and in the rape lot or whatever fucking random space that they end up fucking renting to put on a show, because, as far as I know, Drew Gulak ain't getting a title shot in the fucking CZW arena, because, yep, that ain't happening. Well, anyway, the night show is Evolve 10 at that. And there is no main event signed up yet, because it is To Be Announced versus To Be Announced as their subtitle for it. Because they always put on a big match as their world title, or not even world title, but you know, their headliner. Well, they have Johnny Gargano against Ricochet for the title. Super Smash Brothers up against Chuck Taylor and Rich Swann. AR Fox versus Jigsaw. Tinky Sanchez versus UHA Nation. And then they also will have Sammy Callahan, Bobby Fish, Cloudy, Kyle Matthews, John Davis, and many, many others in attendance. So the show is still going to develop quite a bit before that date, and we'll keep you up to date on that. So, what do you guys got? What do you want to do here?
Can we go over Ring of Honor?
If you'd like to, do the WWE thing. Why not?
Okay.
So Ring of Honor, it's tomorrow and stuff like that. I'd like to be able to.
I'll have a review. I'm gonna watch it tomorrow. So I'll have a review for it next week.
Oh, it's a pay per view, huh?
Yeah, internet pay per view.
I'll pay for that. that's cool. So anyway, Yeah, Stan, I know you didn't watch the pay-per-view over the weekend, but, you know, we're going to go over a few things. So go ahead, chime in with your opinion, because, I mean, you know the product pretty much. So, one thing right off the bat, no John Cena on the entire pay-per-view.
That's why it was so good.
What do you think about that, Stan?
Eric said that's why it was so good. No John Cena on it. It's interesting. I mean, you know, night off. Obviously, there's a change at the top with the titles coming up to all these up-and-coming guys.
All right.
Nice for him to take a step back and let the other guys shine for a little bit.
Yeah, My only fear is I think, well, not that I need to watch them or anything like that, but I think there's probably another 3 shitty movies coming out of one No John Cena on a pay-per-view appearance. Like the Marine 5 and, you know, I don't know what else they could even do at this point. But John Cena playing with children and that, I don't know. John Cena as Sandusky. I don't know. But anyway, that was something that definitely stood out. You know, you had a bunch of different things go on. Ziggler lost the title to Zack Ryder. I'm not a fan of that at all. I'm really not. The Zack Ryder phase is going to go away, and I don't think anyone's going to care. I don't know. Booker T was to fight Cody Rhodes. Well, Cody Rhodes jumped him in the back like fucking once earlier in the show, and then like they went to start the match, and Booker walks out, and like Cody fucking jumps him again, and like he went to the back, like the match wasn't gonna happen, and then like later in the show they decided, well, we're just gonna have that match now, and you know it was like a back and forth match, but it was like they had to beat down Booker for him to be even like, you know, beatable or even on the level of Cody Rhodes type thing. That's kind of like how they played it up, which went well for Cody being a heel. But, I mean, one thing that I got to give Booker 100% credit for is he did what a lot of other guys in the business should be doing as far as veterans, putting these young guys over. And that's what, you know, Cody went over Booker. That's what type of shit needs to be happening. I mean, you see so much of this TNA stuff, and they start talking about the youth, and then fucking Hogan is like the main focus of the company for 6 months to a year. And I just don't see where that pushes your company forward. Like, he's one fucking, like, he could trip over one little fucking, you know, Lego or something on his floor, and his fucking hip is shattered again, and then what? You know, I just don't understand how that's a good way to push a company. So I give Booker a lot of credit for putting over the young talent. So, what do you guys think?
Match-wise, that fucking, like, the way that, like, this whole Cody, like, I don't really watch SmackDown, you know, I watch Raw and shit like that, but this whole Cody Booker T fucking feud is kind of like, I don't like it at all.
Right, well,
and
I don't know why
I don't like, I mean, I'm trying to, like, put my finger on why I don't like it.
Why you don't like it is because have you ever liked a wrestler versus announcer / washed up wrestler / hack? Has there ever been?
Well,
a good
anything with Lawler's fine. I mean, I don't care when people like I'm not like bothered when people go against Lawler, you know, anything like that.
I am.
Like, I hate the whole Cole Lawler thing, but that's because fucking Cole is fucking like shoved down people's throats type deal, you know.
When Jerry Lawler comes out with that stupid one-strap wrestling tights with one saggy booby hanging out, and you think he's supposed to be tough because he hits you with a bunch off the second rope? I mean, it's terrible.
Yeah, but it's better than fucking this whole, like, oh, like, this fucking shit came out of nowhere, you know? The whole Booker, you know, like, I don't know. I don't know what to say. I don't either.
It surprises me that you would actually rather see Jerry Lawler wrestle.
See none of those guys fucking come. Like, honestly, like, those fucking guys in their heyday were okay, but, like sometimes these guys come out and they embarrass themselves. Like, I wish, like, none of them, but, like...
Well, I don't think Booker T embarrassed himself at all.
I don't know why I never liked Booker T. I thought he was, you know, average at sub, you know, at best. Never... You know, did the whole fucking five times spin a room. That shit doesn't. It's just like, you know. It gets
over. First off, I have to disagree. I think Booker T before the five time thing was fantastic. Booker T was
the hard on heat thing. Yeah, but I mean, like, I just. I mean, you're a big WCW. You were like a crazy WCW fan. I watched it when it was on. It was more of Raw type deal, so I really didn't get a chance to like see it like. You know, every week type deal.
Right.
Yeah, see, I like both. I definitely like both, but Booker T was good in his heyday, not when he's whatever, you know, 20 years past when he was a good wrestler. I don't like when they do it with any of them. I can care less. I don't wish Michael Cole would ever go inside the ring, any of them. You know, I don't think any of the announcers should step inside the ring. I don't think it ever works. I've never seen a kiss my foot match, loser leaves town with an announcer. It's just all garbage. Never liked it. Wish they didn't do it. And leave the wrestling to the wrestlers.
Right, right.
All right. Well, I don't know. Airboom beat the fake LAX.
Epico and Primo.
Epico and Primo. And honestly, I don't know shit about Epico. They're calling him the cousin of the other guy, and I don't know if that's
true or not.
Yeah,
I thought that was Hunico. I thought that was Hunico. Was
no,
like,
it's not
fuck?
Hunico. It's Epico and Primo, who Epico is supposed to be the cousin of fucking Primo, and, you know, all of that stuff, and part of the Cologne family or whatever, also related to Carlito. So that's them. That's definitely a different dude. But I don't know shit about Epico other than that, but apparently he's been down in Florida Championship for a while, and then they, you know, when they send, I keep saying his name and then forgetting it immediately because he means that much to me, Primo. When they sent Primo down, they more or less linked him up with his quote-unquote cousin, which I don't know if that's a work or shoot. I don't care. And Primo's always been, like, a good complimentary wrestler. Like, he worked really good matches with Sin Cara because he was able to keep Sin Cara from fucking botching moves. He was able to, like, catch him and, like, steer him straight, that type of thing. He's not the type of guy that's going to stand out as, like, the star, but he has a good amount of, like, keep the match going, keep the match kind of fluent type thing going on for him. So they matched him up with, Rosita.
Rosa Mendez.
Rosa Mendez. And that kind of works or whatever, but, you know, he clearly stole LAX's gimmick. And Homicide and Hernandez did it far, far better with Shelly Martinez. But,
right.
So, either way, great match. I mean, back and forth shit. Airboom, I really thought they were going to get jobbed out because, you know, born smoking fake weed. As soon as, like, he got back on TV, they were going to take that shit off of him. And they didn't, like... They fucking performed, like, just precision fucking moves, the spots, the quick-moving shit, you know, stuff that, I mean, you could be off by a half a second, and it's going to look like a train wreck, and these guys just pulled off precision shit. I was really impressed by their, you know, their comeback matches, the tag team, defended the fucking straps, and looked great out there, so I liked it.
Right. I want to see what they're going to do with this tag division because, I mean, and when we talk about Raw later, you know, Epico and Primo wrestled the Usos in a match. And, you know, when we get to that, I'll, you know, explain my whole thing on that. But I think they're trying to I always say this and they always drop the ball again. But I think they're trying to revitalize the tag team wrestling again.
I don't think they're trying too hard. I think, like, if it happens, like, in the course of them trying to do other shit, like, they're okay with it. But I don't think they're really trying super hard to, like, recruit tag teams and put together guys that are going to work and really make the tag team division strong. I think they're just, like, putting a couple guys in that spot, and if they can make something huge out of it, great. But that's about all the effort they're going to put out. Personally, that's what I think. And I actually heard that through the whole Chris Hero thing, I heard that he failed a drug test, and now they're not in.
Yes, I did hear
anymore.
That. For testosterone level was too high.
Yeah, that's Jesus Christ. So I have no words for that. I don't know.
But the thing is, I mean, like you could see that he was not the same, you know.
The Hero like was definitely ripping up. From what Hero used to be, he was definitely ripping up. He's definitely getting into much more, you know, jacked shape than he was before. Not just getting, like, huge, but definitely getting shredded, you know. And Hero's never like that. He was always a super athletic dude, but really didn't have, like, you know, full crazy athlete body shit, you know. Like, he was just able to perform and do everything he wanted out there, but you didn't look at the guy and go, wow, what fucking shape he's in. Like, you'd have to see him in the ring and just be like, wow, he pulls off some shit. But WWE always wants the body, so I don't know if that's what steered him towards something that he ended up getting caught up with. I don't know. I don't know the dude like that, but I just think it's fucking horrible that dude's finally getting a chance, and next thing you know, again, I gotta keep going back to Mason Ryan's fucking running around the ring looking like a fucking battle toad, and this fucking guy, you know, it's, oh, hey, you smoking fake weed? Oh, what are you? I don't know, man. Your arms are looking a little bigger than last time I seen you. Are you fucking kidding me? There's guys in the company that I swear did that fucking, that Incredible Hulk shit, that gamma ray stuff.
Right.
They've got to be doing something, Jesus. Houston doesn't make any goddamn sense.
I don't know what the deal is with Hero, but this isn't like, you know, I don't know if this is going to be like the last time we're going to hear any Hero to WWE talk.
Supposedly they're not interested in him anymore, and it took them forever to even like look at him. So I don't know. I have a feeling
where does he end up from
him.
Here? Where does he end up here from here?
Indies. Back to Indies.
Was the Indies?
Yeah. Honestly, I mean, I don't know. I really don't know what goes on with him. I mean, he's had a million chances with, you know, every company out there, and he's done his thing. For some reason, every time the WWE comes up, they're not impressed. And I can't see why, because to me, he always looked like fucking cookie-cutter WWE guy. Like, he looked like he would fit in the WWE before most of the indies would. Always. He always has.
Right.
So I don't know if it's some personal shit, some shit that's going on backstage. I don't know if he's rubbing who the wrong way. I have no clue, but something's going on that's keeping him out of that company.
And I want to say something, but I might be wrong, and I might, you know, this might be squashed, but don't him and Punk have some heat?
I don't think they have heat. I mean, I could be wrong, but I mean, they used to work together a lot. Back IWA, fucking...
But there was a falling out at some point.
Maybe there was, but, I mean, shit. These guys worked a 90-minute match in fucking IWA Mid-South to a fucking draw. 90-minute fucking draw. You know, again, I mean, his performance on the indies has definitely got him something that he should have had a shot. I don't think he would have even been looked at this point. I mean, if he had heat with CM Punk, I don't think that would have stopped him from getting in before or early in CM Punk's run. At this point, I think they wouldn't even look at him if CM Punk had legit heat with him. I don't think they would now give him a bigger shot than they ever did and then cut it off, you know?
Right.
Because CM Punk is such a big player now that...
How do you think Hero feels because Claudio gets signed before him?
How
do you think Hero
would
feel about that? Like,
you have to ask Chris Hero.
Yeah.
Anyway, Sheamus beat Swagger. I really have nothing to say about that. Two big ass dudes. Just for whatever reason, it's not doing what it should for me. I kind of thought that was a good matchup, you know, size wise and stuff like that. But for whatever reason, it's kind of falling flat to me, and I really don't have anything to just, you know, add to that.
Right. Yeah, it was whatever. No.
Another one that I'm just I've had it. Fucking Beth B. Kelly. Enough said. fucking Big Show beat Mark Henry with another one of them big lazy ass punches. One of the worst finishes you will ever see in a wrestling ring is when he winces in pain like he's punching them with his balls or something. And he just barely hits him with his big stupid fist, and then the guy just sells it like death. So he does that after such a hard fought match, and then Daniel Bryan comes out, cashes in the Money in the Bank, pins him, big ovation, whole nine. So I'm happy for that. Well, now here's the match everybody had been waiting for. Everybody had been waiting for. This was one man known as...
I'm the Chaperone.
Against another man.
It's a super shredder.
That's right. And it was a ladder match, but not just any ladder match. This one had implications of... That's right. It was a sledgehammer match. A sledgehammer ladder match for two guys with severe fucking leg injuries. One has torn his quad. The other has got more knee surgeries than he's had championships. You had an epic showdown of limping. And on the top, hanging above the ladder, was nothing but a sledgehammer. The one who climbed the ladder can take the sledgehammer. They could use it. So they did that. They continued to go out there and wrestle. I think that's what they were calling it. And they were limping a lot. At one point they ended up over the guardrail. was having Ash did like the, oh man, I wish someone would have held his hand while he limped over the back over the guard rail pad thing, because he just felt bad for him. It looked really painful, like he wasn't getting paid enough to do that, and I don't think any other company would pay him more than what he's getting paid, so, you know, it's just weird. And then eventually, you know, Triple H gets the sledgehammer off the top, and now Nash, he looks at him, and he's down on one knee, and he throws the click sign, the Wolfpack sign at him, you know, gives him the old,
I'm your friend!
And then next thing you know, well, Triple H no sells that shit and hits him with the, and that's pretty much the end of the match. So, you know, just to summarize that for all that didn't see it, you caught the full experience. And I actually had more fun pulling those clips than I did watching that match.
Match. By the way, you know, what's going on, Lane? Lane's in the chat room.
Cool. What's your thoughts on the match, Eric?
It was fucking, Kevin Nash. Well,
yes, it is.
Quit the business. Burn the boot.
It's a super shredder.
He should just, like, retire. He needs to retire. Now he's talking retirement. Like, he's
just
saying,
the secret of the ooze.
Yeah, he just definitely needs to just fucking, like, get out quick, because it was interesting. The match was, you know.
Now, Stan, hearing the rundown that I just gave it, how would you feel about that fantastic performance?
I think it would have been a little bit of a snore fest. I think it would have been a little bit of garbage. Kevin Nash is terrible. And I don't hate Triple H as much as some people on the show seem to. Kevin Nash is just terrible. And
I'm the chaperone.
I don't understand why they did this as a ladder match. I get the TLC thing, but they could have done other things without the ladder part. Jay, said it last week, and you said it perfectly. Neither man really can climb the ladder without being in a wrestling match. So why put him in a match with one? But didn't see it like you talked about, and I don't want to see that match. That'll definitely be something I fast forward if I do watch the replay.
Right. I honestly think they should have just did maybe hang up a cage or something. And they'd be like twin ladders and see which one of these guys could hang Christmas lights off the top of the ladders on each side of the ring first, you know? And just watch them with their rickety knees and wincing in pain, like, oh, shit, it's for the kids, you know, and then stapling the fucking Christmas lights up, you know? And then they black out and, you know, the ring afterwards and everybody enjoys the lights, you know?
So,
probably be a better go than that. Huh?
Who got the sledgehammer?
Oh, that would be Triple H, the chaperone.
I'm the chaperone.
No.
And I got the sledgehammer. That's right.
Did Kevin Nash even attempt to get, like, past the second step?
Oh, yeah, they were at the top at one point, and then he punched him a few times, and then he kind of, like, walked back down the ladder rather than falling off of it. And then he botched the pedigree twice. I thought this was going to be the fucking sickest finish ever, because I figured Nash's knees would liquefy when he takes the pedigree, because clearly it's a knee bump. And I was like, dude, this guy is just going to, his knees are like Ritz crackers at this point. He's going down hard. He's never getting back up. They're going to peel him off of the mat when this is over. And then he was thinking the same thing I was, and then completely just, like, fell down, like, in thought of the pedigree. And then he picked him up again and then kind of botched it again, but it was good enough to call it the pedigree. And then that's what led to Triple H getting a sledgehammer. Yeah. So there was that. Well, the main event, the reason why I actually liked this, CM Punk beat The Miz and Alberto Del Rio. And it was a tables, ladders, and chairs match. And the match kind of told a story where they were trying to super heal him. There were a lot of good bumps and stuff like that. They were trying to just super heal CM Punk. At one point, they tried to handcuff him to the ladder. He broke the ladder to pull the handcuffs off of it to get free to make sure they didn't go get the title. A lot of, you know, close calls and this and that. And eventually, they handcuffed him to a turnbuckle, to the ropes, or actually the turnbuckle. And I haven't seen it actually done in the ring before. Obviously, you know, anybody who's been to an indie wrestling show, you kind of know how the ring works and how they, you know, they unscrew and screw the corner turnbuckles on with a wrench or whatever the case is, and then it pops off. Well, he grabbed it with his hands and he unscrewed the ropes and popped the ropes off in order to get the handcuffs off to go and, you know, get free again and break up the climbing of the ladder and that whole thing. It was fucking awesome. I thought that was just, like, really cool. Like, he's at that point, you think someone's going to run in and save him. You know, Cena hasn't been on the fucking pay-per-view all day. He's going to come in and let him out of the handcuffs or something, and, you know, just corny bullshit. And he fucking, you know, strength fucking twists the turnbuckle off and, you know, gets out that way. At one point, Ricardo Rodriguez was thrown off the top of the ladder, almost the top of the ladder, like the tall one, from inside the ring. They tipped the ladder and he fell off of that through a table on the outside. Pretty fucking impressive bump for a guy like that. And there were a lot of high spots in that. There were a lot of things that made it definitely worth watching. And then, you know, the back and forth climatic thing and CM Punk winning it in the end, I thought that was really, really good. What were your thoughts on the match, Eric?
I liked the CM Punk winning. I liked the whole with the handcuff spot. I thought that was, you know, good, quote unquote, good psychology, you know, a good way to suspend the belief that, you know, CM Punk wasn't going to win the match, and then for the whole thing to happen and to end up getting, you know, the belt. It's like, you know, people can get behind that and be like, oh fuck, you know, Punk's, you know, handcuffed, he's losing, you know. It's like, oh come on. And then when he fucking, you know, but it was good. It was a good build up, and like I said, it's just, I'm happy with the the final decision and putting Punk over, and, you know, just, you know, it was a good match to showcase both Miz and Del Rio. It was like the top, you know, some of those top guys on Raw, and you know, guys that can go, and
right, for sure. That was the pay-per-view. I thought it was pretty good, you know, just due to that match and some things like that. I enjoyed it. Going down with that last match, I definitely capped it off and gave me something that I cared about.
Though, before we go into anything else, so what? We didn't go over this yet. What's your thoughts on the picture of Punk and Danielson? What's your feeling on that?
As I mentioned earlier about the title match, the title picture, all of that stuff when Juan was on, I liked the picture of Punk and Danielson was awesome for starters, but then for closers, I don't know why anybody in the fucking locker room, the high paid salary locker room, doesn't have anything better than a shitty camera phone with fucking fried chicken grease on it, because you see these fucking pictures that are, like, tweeted and stuff, and it's just like someone put a piece of wax paper over the shittiest phone ever and then fucking took a picture. Like, I don't understand why there's nobody backstage with, like, a $500 camera, nobody, that could just run up, take a picture, and fucking send it out on the internet, like, during the show or anything. It's always, like, some fucking wrestler with a phone worse than mine, and I have a $14 phone, for those who don't know. You know, just take these shitty pictures. But the picture, I like that. Originally, I was like, oh, that's fucking awesome to see the two of them with the titles. And then the professional picture, someone who did have a camera worth fucking talking about, was when they posted all of the champions. And that was CM Punk, Bryan Danielson, Zack Ryder, Cody Rhodes, Evan Bourne, Kofi Kingston and Beth Phoenix in the middle, all holding their titles, and I thought that was a phenomenal picture. I was a big, big fan of that, and yeah, that was that. Well, I'm gonna play this song real quick. We'll come back with our very it's over with me. I think it's over. We'll be back with Japanese with Eric after this song.
Ho, ho, when it's Christmas time, everybody's waiting in a big ass line. She's sitting on my lap, and big for Elmo's iPads and crap, yeah. Breaths are out of control, my elves are doing nothing but shoveling coal. Older girls sit on me, and get the picture taken ironically. Hey, girl, look at that belly, like a bowl full of jelly. As seen on the telly, it sticks out. I come down your chimney, though it don't quite fit me. Why do I smell kindling? Put it out. My doctor told me I had diabetes. That's what happens when you eat 100 billion cookies. I still deliver all this booty. It don't matter if it's drizzling, freezing, bleeding, flowing, snowing. I'm Santa and I know it. I'm Santa and I know it. Yo, I got a big old gut. I ain't a nutcracker, but I do bust nuts. Girls love the taste of my sugar plums and my candy cane. What? I got a listening audience. It's pretty much a listen of all my shorties. Wait, let me explain it. This is 'cause and I have a special arrangement, yeah. I'm jolly and burly. I never come early. I'm stuffing your turkey. Check it out. When the ladies get nippy, I'm making deliveries from Dallas to Sydney. Then I'm out. Single moms are friendly. Every Christmas Eve, when the night comes to an end, my sack is always empty. I got a 9-inch beard, and I ain't afraid to grow it, blow it, show it, comb it, stroke it. I'm Santa.
Yeah, so that's some Santa and I know it. Yeah, man. So,
real quick before I, go with the segment, I just threw a chat room question out, and we just went through one paper. Well, I'm getting to it right now.
All right.
So we already, it's the last pay per view of the year for WWE. But the next pay-per-view is the Royal Rumble, and I pretty much asked people in the chat room, who do you think will win this year's Royal Rumble?
Well, I have my clear answer, but, if you could throw out some, guesses from the chat, how many people do we have in the chat? I can't see the chat, so I have no idea.
We have a total of, well, I know numerous people are, all right, so Lane says he's winning, and Juan
says awesome.
He's winning. Yes.
Dude, I'm definitely getting that. Well, now I don't know. Yeah, Juan winning it.
Juan says it will be him and Lane at the end, and he'll win.
Well, I'm going with Lane. I got to go with Chris Jericho. I got to go with Jericho returning, winning the Royal Rumble, and fighting CM Punk at WrestleMania.
Stan thinks Edge is going to win. But he doesn't know.
All right.
Edge is going to win?
Huh?
I think Edge is going to win? Is that what we
said?
I made one Edge comment, and that's going to haunt me forever.
Well, I didn't say it, and I sure as hell wouldn't call it. But what do you think, Stan?
I think much better than Edge is definitely Zack Ryder.
Eric, what do you got?
I can see Orton or Orton or Del Rio winning it.
Huh. All right. Well, just kind of, All right. You fucking seriously think Zack Ryder is fucking winning the Royal Rumble. You got to be kidding me, right?
Yeah, I'm just busting your balls there. I actually like the Jericho thing, but something I heard that was interesting, and I don't know if they'd be able to do it quick enough or anything like that. Doesn't CM Punk really want to have a match with Stone Cold?
He does.
Would they bring both of them back to Rock and Stone Cold on the same WrestleMania?
I don't think
Why
it's
not?
Beyond possibilities. I really don't think it's beyond possibility. Actually, it was, I want to say less than a year ago. It was right after the whole Tough Enough thing. Stone Cold really started to get a bug in his ass, and he said something like, I think I'm ready to go again, or some shit like that.
Yeah, who knows?
So I would not be shocked. A lot of Jericho is on the tip of people's tongues, though, and that is definitely a big dream match. Obviously, that match can wait longer than the Stone Cold one could, so it wouldn't shock me that much. I think, overall, the far better match you're going to get is Jericho versus CM Punk. But if that's the direction they want to go, and honestly, dude, it comes down to, and I hate to say it, I really, really hate to say it, but I think we're getting Triple H and Undertaker again. I really do. And I think Triple H is his little power move.
I don't know about
that fucking spot again.
I don't know about that. I think we're getting, I could definitely see Brock Lesnar.
Oh, then you're definitely out of your mind. What do you think is going to happen as far as The Undertaker, Stan? WrestleMania, who's he going to be?
I think, again, you're right. I think Triple H is going to pull the power play on it.
That's fucking stupid. And that's fucking stupid. All right, and I've heard that numerous times, too, and I think that's a fucking stupid idea because who wants to see it? I mean, who the fuck cares about
Triple H?
That's
well,
it, though. Who the fuck cares?
It looks like you're building up Kane versus, Cena's obviously in something already, but it looks like they're doing something off the wall with Kane.
That could be something for Royal Rumble.
Yeah, I guess. But honestly, when it comes down to it, here's the deal. I thought it was supposed to be, I honestly think that they were supposed to do it with Kane. Well, I don't think that they were supposed to, but I thought the best thing ever that they can do is bring Kane back in mask. They did. He was shit without a mask. I was cool for 6 months tops, and he did it for 8 years. You bring him back in mask, you get back to the old, I don't say shit, I just come out and do my basic kind of stealthy attack, punch, kick, whatever, catch him in a choke slam out of fucking nowhere, whatever. Do the Kane thing, dark gimmick. Do that. You bring Undertaker back, and a lot of people have hinted that those cryptic promos might be the Undertaker and not Jericho. I'm cool with you going that direction.
Oh.
But now with the little girl talking, the little girl continually talking, what you have to do there is you have to bring Michelle McCool, his wife, back in a dark gimmick as his manager, valet, whatever the case is. So now you bring her back in a whole new role. She's been pushed before, so it wouldn't be beyond belief. It wouldn't just be like, who's this jobber girl? Like, she was doing the women's title thing for a minute. And, you know, you bring her back as some dark gimmick, whatever, and then she's coming in and making it, like, impossible to stop The Undertaker. He's running through a few people. Then Kane, who's also running through a few people, crosses paths with him. Now it's kind of a little lopsided because now you got, you know, Michelle McCool doing her thing. Now you bring back Paul Bearer.
Absolutely.
And do the one last fucking run, Paul Bearer on Kane's side, do the whole super gimmicked out fucking Kane Undertaker. Both of them retire after fucking WrestleMania. You do it fucking Hell in a Cell or Inferno or whatever the fuck you want to do, and that would be my situation.
And is there any way to let The Undertaker obviously win the match, but then eliminate both of them at the end? I think that would work. I don't know what the way is, but I think that would definitely work to just, you know,
It's kind of hard. You more or less got to put out a match that takes everything out of both of them. Undertaker comes out with the win, and then they have nothing left in them or something like that. because, like, you can't do anything, even though it would be cool to do, like, the whole, okay, Paul Bearer turns on both of them and sets the ring on fire afterwards, you know, pyrotechnic, whatever the fuck, so it looks like they're gone or whatever, the ring drops into the fucking bottom of the arena or whatever the case is, would make sense, but then you have to follow up, and there is no follow-up. This is it. So that's the only thing that you really can't do too much with. But the thing that makes me think they're going with Triple H is Triple H came back from, what did he do? He came back from, it was actually before the Nash match with, you know, said Sledgehammer. And before even talking about that, they were doing the Slammy thing, and he's like, well, you know, people are saying the match with me and Undertaker when I tombstoned him, that was the match, that was the moment of the year. Well, there was a bigger moment than that. That's when I left him laying in the ring, and I was the only one to have him carried out of the ring in a WrestleMania ever, and we haven't seen him since then, so I think his streak is over because of me. And I'm just like, fuck. As soon as he started that shit, I was just like, fuck you. Because you're now saying that you're responsible for him never coming back again. And of course he's going to come back for his 20th WrestleMania. Who the fuck do you think he needs to confront? The asshole that talked about you never coming back again. So it more or less painted him into a corner where it's got to be him and Triple H. And in that perspective, you know, politics, polls, whatever, Triple H honestly could probably pull off a better match than Kane could. But gimmick-wise, it's the best thing to do. I think you got to go Hell in a Cell. Triple H, Undertaker, Hell in a Cell, fucking between the two of them. Have there been a Hell in a Cell that didn't involve either Triple H or Undertaker?
I don't think so.
Right, so that's my opinion, is like you would have to go with Hell in a Cell. I wouldn't say one last time, because obviously it's, you know, going to have to be used over the years or something, but at least for a while, you know, like a couple of years, leave that shit untouched. And the last time ever, Triple H versus Undertaker, Hell in a Cell, and fucking do it big. Leave everything out there, and Undertaker goes over and has nothing left in him, and that'll be that. I guess that's kind of what we're left with. But if you get that, you get Rock versus Cena, and then you interject Stone Cold versus CM Punk. I guess you got a big, huge throwback fucking Attitude Era type WrestleMania. I mean, that might be what they're going for. I don't know.
And they'll sell, but Lane has an interesting thing for the Royal Rumble. He thinks the Shockmaster will be entrant number one, but he will eliminate himself by falling over the top rope coming in.
Another thing that's been talked about, because CM Punk is making such a big thing about this whole, you know, the dynamic dudes.
Right.
Do you think that there's any chance that they would reform that? And you would actually get fucking Shane Douglas and John Laurinaitis together to do the Dynamic Dudes gimmick again to face CM Punk and whoever. It'd be the funniest thing ever, but
never say never.
Yeah. I think that's, you know, pretty big odds against that one, though.
Right.
What do you think, Stan?
Laryngitis, as you say.
Yes, as many people say.
I have no idea.
No Shane Douglas and Laryngitis together again? Saying rad and things of that nature?
I hope not.
Juan says, God, no.
Right. Well, let's, I don't know. Anyway, do you have that card up? I'd like to do some Japanese with Eric. Oh, no, I'm not ready yet. Well, okay. You got your card?
Do you have the music ready so I can be able to talk?
You're going to have to talk over the music, so speak up if you can't hear yourself. So anyway, this is our popular segment where Eric reads Japanese cards, and you'll have to clue us in on what this is results to. I sent this to Eric earlier, and it is all phenomenal. So this is Japanese with Eric.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Yes.
So this is New Japan Pro Wrestling, Satoshi Kojima 20th anniversary show. It was on Samurai TV. It was in Corken Hall, 2,000 fans. The opening match, Raisuke Taguchi and Kaisuke Makame beat Tiger Mask and Hiromu Takanashi in 9 minutes when Taguchi used the La Asata on Takanashi. In the second match, Hideo Saito beat Tomohiro Ishii by disqualification. In the third match, Shinsuke Nakamura, Toru Yano, and Yujiro Takahashi defeated Togi Makabe, Hiroki Gato, and King Fail when Takahashi used the Tokyo Pimps on Fail. In the fourth match, the special tag match, the great Sasuke and the great Kosuke beat Jado and Gato. In the fifth match,
how did that end?
They did not say.
I think it does.
Alright, when mine says there's nothing.
Oh, okay. What was the fifth match?
The fifth match is it was a 6-man tag. It was the third generation versus Hamaguchi Dojo Special. Yusutaka Yoshi, Wataru Inoue, and Tomokai Honma defeated Yuji Nagata, Osamu Nishimura, and Koji Kanemoto when Inoue used the Spear of Justice on Kanemoto. In the sixth match, Minoru Suzuki and Taichi beat Hiroshi Tanahashi and Kushida when Taichi pinned Kushida after Suzuki used a Gotch-style pile driver. In the main event, Satoshi Kojima 20th anniversary match, Satoshi Kojima and Kazayashi defeated Hiroshi Tenzin and Funaki when Kojima used a Western Lariat on Funaki. Special guests such as Kishimoto, Toshiaki Kawada, and Stan Hansen appeared as Kojima celebrated his 20th anniversary in style by winning 2 matches.
And that was Japanese with Eric.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Yes. Fantastic. So, that's what we got there. What news or notes do you have from Raw? Because I really don't have much. I skimmed it, but it was more or less like
I watched the whole. I'm the idiot that watched the whole thing. So.
Yes, you are.
Go
ahead.
Well,
do you know how bad it is?
I don't have an order. I know, like, what happened and, like, thoughts on...
Hold on. Two things. First off, the Colts just beat the Texans.
Get the fuck out of here.
Well, they just scored with 19 seconds left to go up 18-16 with the extra point coming up here. So,
what is it? 18 to what?
16. 18-16.
They're
going
to go up by 3 with 19 seconds left.
Ah, fuck. Three losses across the board. And what was the other?
The Monday Night Football game was so much more important to myself, and I think Jay, too, that we watched the stadium in darkness over watching Monday Night Raw. At least
yes, we did. We sure did.
I watched Chris Berman ramble on for 20 minutes about how happy he is. It wasn't an earthquake, but at the same time, he really thought it was an earthquake, but it could have been an earthquake, and in 89
yeah.
They had an earthquake. And I'd much rather watch that than Monday Night Raw. So.
I watched at least 6 replays of the Transformer blowing up.
Yeah, before,
I watched more of the... Go ahead.
Yeah.
I watched more of that Transformer blowing up than I ever watched of any Transformer movie.
That's a good point too. Yes, and there was more pyro on my TV from San Francisco than there was from wherever Raw was.
Right. Okay. So, what happened on Raw, Eric?
I'm getting an order. So, give me 1 second. Just finding the
order.
Well, because I want to have like some type of structure. I don't want to just start throwing shit out.
I thought you got a second job or something. Someone's ordering some fries and nuggets.
arrogant.
What was that?
Opening,
what kind of sauce?
The opening was good. The opening
okay.
Was I don't know if you saw the opening, but pretty much you know, music played, the intro played, it went right to a blackout, and it had pretty much a drum roll and, you know, CM Punk narrating who the champion, who pretty much saying, you know, in this
Michael
match.
Blackout? Yeah, I saw that part. There was a stadium,
yeah.
And then.
Yeah, blackout. And then they kept showing my quarterback running on one leg over and over and over again.
Yeah.
But pretty much,
that,
you know,
that
CM Punk pretty much was running down the new champions, and when it, you know, he'd be like, he would like swerve everybody. He'd be like, oh, was it this guy?
Lights out, niggas.
But it pretty much,
yeah.
You know, all three new champions, CM Punk, Daniel Bryan, and Zack Ryder came in the ring, and they started talking about, you know, well, Daniel Bryan and Zack Ryder started talking about, you know, winning a championship, and which brought out Dolph Ziggler, Alberto Del Rio, and The Miz, and they weren't too happy, and they decided to come down and start trouble with Punk, Daniel Bryan, and Ryder, and your boy Laurinaitis comes out and announces a six-man tag for the main event. And that's that was that.
Yeah,
that was the opening segment for.
One thing
so,
is I did skim this on my DVR. One thing I did like quite a bit, I thought it was pretty awesome. They were in Philly, and he actually, you know, CM Punk, he's good for bringing out like realism and shit that people actually remember who knew him from, you know, an indie wrestler. And he brought up, you know, how awesome it was to wrestle down the street at the Murphy Rec Center with guys like Daniel Bryan and those type of guys. And that was really cool because, like, I saw fucking CM Punk in the Murphy Rec Center. I actually have a program autographed by CM Punk and Homicide and Paul London and Lowkey and Damoff and a bunch of other people, Samoa Joe, from a show at the Murphy Rec Center on my wall. So
were you at the first show or no?
Colts win.
No.
Wow, that's tremendous. Fuck, man. I almost picked the Colts, man, because just spread wise, and I was just like, you know, they might be fired up enough to pull off something, at least pull it close, and they had the 7 points, and Jesus fucking Christ. No, it wasn't at the first show. I forget which show I went to actually first. The one I'm talking about was from June 28, 2003. That was the, I think the first Glory by Honor, I want to say. I could be wrong.
Okay. That had, what was it? Do you remember the main event from that?
Well, they had Damoff versus Samoa Joe, and they had Fight Without Honor, Homicide versus Trent Acid.
Okay.
So,
is that the one where Damoff got knocked out?
Very possibly, yeah. That was a hard hitting match. So, awesome
right.
Shit. But anyway, you
know
that's
you
like
with pizza or a pretzel at the snack bar tonight.
What's that?
Do you remember
cut it out.
Pizza or the pretzel from the snack bar that night?
I ordered probably nothing. I generally don't eat in these buildings, especially in Philadelphia. I'd rather my stomach eat its own fucking walls. My stomach acids eat the walls off of my stomach before I eat something in Philadelphia. But, maybe just me.
So getting back to Raw, real quick, a random note. I thought it was funny that
segue.
They kind of... What was that?
That was a good segue.
Yeah, so getting back to Raw, I thought it was funny how they, you know, Michael Cole, like with Zack Ryder and winning the U.S. title, he was kind of making a mockery of Zack Ryder's dad because they showed like Zack Ryder's dad and Zack Ryder cheering for him, and he's like, "What a freaking, you know," he's like, "What a loser this guy is."
Yeah.
And I was like, "Wow, that's kind of random." That like you know they showed
Zack
this
Ryder's
like.
Father, I did skim through this also, and Zack Ryder's father did look awful lot, a real lot like a Long Island postman. In the old times, exactly like his clothes. He had, like, the postman mustache and the postman tan all year round. He definitely looked like he'd definitely be delivering your mail on Long Island somewhere. Now, earlier, Eric, you said that CM Punk came out and
did a drum roll to see who won each match. So basically, he just came out on Monday Night Raw and said, nobody watches our pay-per-view, so now we are going to guess who won last night? Okay.
How funny was that? I don't know if you've seen that part, but that was like the opening. I don't know if you've seen the opening. But it was that's what I was like. I was like, why would you like make like an announcement like who won your pay per view, like not even 24 hours after your pay per view.
Listen, I don't want to interrupt this tremendous Raw thing that we got going on, but I am going to have my guest that expected to have on earlier call in just a minute. So. Just to, preface that, I am definitely going to jump in with that in just a minute because, with this Christmas extravaganza be without our guest. So I'd like to jump in with him in just a minute. We'll see. That's bound to pop up. He could bullshit a little bit about Raw, but I will cut in when we get him on.
Okay.
All right. So, Raw.
But yeah, but the Usos wrestled Epico and Primo. That was decent. The Usos are. I'll just go real quick over. The Usos are doing some like they're doing more of Samoan type thing. They're coming out and dancing and doing all types of shit. And...
Well,
that was good.
All right, so I do have my guest on. I'd like to welcome to the show. The best ring announcer in the business today, Larry fucking Legend. What's going on, Larry?
What an introduction. I'm humbled.
Well, speaking of introductions, we have the best intro man out. So what's going on, Larry?
Not a whole lot. Just got caught up in that whole Christmas hustle bustle, or I would have called in a whole lot earlier. But thanks for having me on, and... thanks for the intro. It means a lot to me that you would think enough about, my my skills and how I lay it down on the microphone to call me the best, okay? The best ring announcer ever. That's a real tall drink of water with names like Howard Finkel, and Mel Phillips to share the company with. But I really do appreciate that.
Yeah. Oh. I have a few things to chat with you about and, ask you about and stuff like that. But, we have Eric on the line as well. And we have my
what's
friend
up,
Stan on as well.
What's going on, Larry?
Chilling, man.
And
Stan, what's up with you?
All right, how are you, Larry?
Doing well, man.
Stan had mentioned a couple weeks ago when he actually attended his first CZW show, how much he appreciated your efforts out there. And I figure I'll give him this chance to, tell you the same thing he told me and everybody else out there. Stan,
right on.
Well, Larry, how you doing?
I'm doing
couple,
well. Yeah.
At your last show there for CZW, that was my first CZW show. Been a wrestling fan for basically a lifetime, like everybody on this program right now, I'm sure has been. First time going out there to see CZW. Jay talked to me about it many, many times. Finally had the opportunity. Did meet you backstage or whatnot there in the parking lot. Said hello. Went out. And I do just want to repeat what I said on this show 2 weeks ago. They asked me what my opinion of the Cage of Death 13 was. And one of the things I did put was Larry Legend is one of the finest ring announcers I've seen in my time watching wrestling. I hung on his every words. His eyes told the story, and his movements provided a subplot for what I was about to witness. Through him, I knew what to look for, who the heel was, who was the babyface, and what I was going to keep my focus on during the matches. And I just want to say that I thought you did just a tremendous job with that whole Cage of Death show. And you really, really put something into the entertainment factor of the show. And I thank you for that.
Wow, man, I'm speechless. I mean, I don't know how many people pay as close attention to the work that I'm doing because, I really think you hit the nail on the head when you said the entertainment factor of what it is that we do. And, a lot of people say, I'm the best ring announcer or one of the best ring announcers ever. And I'll be 100% honest with everybody. I do think that I have a tremendous voice, and I am in love with my own voice, but I really don't think that just pound for pound, voice for voice, that my voice is really on the level of, let's say, someone like Michael Buffer. You know, that guy does what he does effortlessly. He doesn't even work up a sweat, you know. And if you ever, if you watch me, I'm sweating Crisco at the CW event because I am feeling it as much as Danny Havoc is feeling it, as much as Sandy Callahan is feeling it, as much as A.R. Fox is feeling it. I'm feeling it, and I really feel that one of the reasons that I get a lot of the accolades that I get is whether or not the people who are watching the show realize it, like you so eloquently, you know, articulated, you know, that you did realize it and were aware of it. I don't know if they do or they don't, but I'm working. Like, I am doing a job, and I am working to give Sammy goosebumps before he wrestles Adam Cole, and to give Adam Cole goosebumps before he wrestles Sammy Callahan. And you know, it really means a lot to me that out of everything that was happening at Cage at F13, that you were aware of the fact that I don't just go out there to announce in this corner, in that corner, but, you know, when I put on my tuxedo, I'm out there to work just as hard. And in a lot of ways, you know, my job is from beginning to end. I don't do one match and then I'm through with it. You know, my job starts, you know, first match all the way until I'm telling you guys drive home safely. So it really means a lot to me that you would be aware of, you know, me reacting to the villain getting into the ring or not wanting to, you know, be close to him because you never know what he could do, you know, or sort of like, you know, really beaming with pride at, like, you know, a fan favorite. Like, little things like that, I'm working. I know that eyes could be on me, and I want it to be as much of a moment before the match begins to get you in the mood like, oh, shit, it's about to start right now, you know. So it really means a lot to me. I vaguely remember meeting you in the parking lot. I remember J-Cat introducing me to you, but you know how that parking lot is. Things can get kind of hazy. So, you know, it really means a lot to me. And much to his credit, J-Cat told me, he was like, you should go and listen to the archives because my buddy had a lot of great things to say about you, and I'm glad I had the opportunity to hear you say those things to me right now.
Yeah, I definitely wanted to allow him to say that, like, straight to you, because I listened to it myself and was like, wow, Larry would really appreciate that. And I've always felt that way, you know, about your talents and everything, but, you know, to hear someone who first time ever showed up at a show and just automatically was drawn to what you put out there, I was like, man, he would love that shit. So
it's awesome, and it's a nice reaffirming, you know, nod for me to just keep doing what I'm doing, because, you know, a lot of the times people say, oh, you should be on TV, you know, you should be in TNA or you should be in the E or something like that, but you know what? What we're doing right now is so much more real to me, you know, to actually be as close to the CZW fans as I can get. Like, I'm not sure if, like, you know, Justin Roberts, you know, or Jeremy Borash gets to, like, you know, mingle with the fans, you know, the diehard fans as much as, you know, someone in my position does.
Right.
And, you know, I'm not going to say, you know, J-Cat, you and I are best friends, but I'm connected to you, and you're so much a part of Philly and CZW to me as, you know, any number of the wrestlers that have come and gone. And, you know, it's that connection that I'm able to make, you know, and have a lot of fun. Don't let me forget that. I'm having a lot of fun when I do this that makes me love my job on the level that I am. So I really appreciate it. And, I know I'm going on here, but I don't know if I told you this, Jay, or anyone, but that actually was my last show in the arena because I'm not going to be able to make the Excellent Adventure show, and that that hasn't really been announced or anything like that. And truth be told, I really hate it. But
right.
I feel like if there was any show to go out on, you know, Cage at F13 doesn't get much bigger than that. So I feel good hanging up my microphone in the arena, at least, you know, with Cage at F13 as my last show. So,
well, why don't you give us some background? What actually got you into, you know, wanting to be an announcer? Or, I mean, was it something you just wanted to be part of the wrestling business and you found your niche? Or what actually was it that drew you to doing what you do now?
Well, you know what? It was wanting to be a part of the wrestling business. Let me ask you, do you remember Swinging from the Fences? Were you at Swinging from the Fences? It was one of Bailey's last appearances in the arena.
Yeah.
Okay,
yep.
And do you remember there was like kind of like a camera crew that was like following me around and like filming me like at ringside, and they stayed for about half of the show, but yeah, well,
to a certain extent,
were,
I mean, there's camera crews that show up. There's so many cameras at this point. I don't know who they're following.
Oh yeah. I know that's really getting to be bothersome for a lot of people.
It's a little excessive,
buy front row tickets. But
yeah.
there was a crew there, and they were basically doing a story on me. And, you know, and just sort of like how I got involved. And, I mean, basically, I'm not going to lie, I used to, you know, mess around with my buddies in the backyard, it turns out a lot of us did. And around the time that we sort of were like, you know, we're not going to do this thing anymore because someone could really get hurt, then it's just not worth it. There's other things that we're interested in. I was the guy that was like, no, I think I really am into this whole wrestling thing. And, you know, if you guys are not going to do it, you know, that's fine. But I think that I really want to pursue this, you know, as something that I want to be involved in. And truth be told, it's like a lot of the times I watch some of those old backyard tapes, and I was always the ring announcer, unaware of it. You know, I was always, you know, behind the camera. You know, we sort of had a ring announcer off camera or sort of a commentator off camera. But I was always doing my role as, like, a villain in the backyard. But then also being the real communicator of, like, you know, storylines, this guy coming to the ring. I wasn't aware of that at first. And anyway, long story short, I know it's too late. But after 9/11, I pretty much decided that I was not going to not have done something in my life if all of a sudden it was my last day. You know, because after seeing those images of those people jump out of the top of the towers and thinking about those people going to work and just thinking that it was another day, you know, in the trenches, you know, they had no idea that a lot of them would meet their end that day. So I said shortly after 9/11 had really sunk in, I said, you know what, F this. I love doing what I do in the backyard, and there's no way that I'm not going to at least make a stab at this thing. And with that, I basically in Baltimore, I'm from Baltimore, Maryland originally. There was a local wrestling school, kind of like the CZW Academy, and they had bought spots during Raw. When Raw would come on, like it would be like, you know, regular national commercials and then a local commercial, and they had a training school. So shortly after 9/11, I went to the training school and I said, hey, you know, I didn't tell them the 9/11 story, but I said, hey, you know, I really would love to be involved in, you know, the business side of what it is that you guys do to make the school successful and your promotion. The promotion is Maryland Championship Wrestling, which is where I first met Ruckus. And, you know, I originally started out being like an admin assistant. Like I used to like help out in the school, like with filing paperwork, organizing mailing lists and things like that. And I was really, really dependable, really, really on my job, you know, never really trained or anything, never told anyone that I did the backyard stuff and that was, you know, what really got me in there to help them out. But, you know, just merchandise, you know, like, you know, you go to a Ring of Honor show and there's always that guy behind the merch table. Well, that used to be like one of my first things that I did for MCW, tearing tickets, stuff like that. And finally, one day, their ring announcer, a guy called Steve Ventarella, he joined the police academy, and joining the police academy meant no ifs, ands, or buts about it. He couldn't do any wrestling shows, and it was actually former ECW referee Judge Jeff Jones. I'll never forget this. He was like, you know what we should do? We should have Larry ring announce. And, you know, I tried to, like, no-sell it. You know, I really tried to be like, you know, oh, yeah, maybe we should. But I was, like, jumping up and down, like, oh, awesome. Now I actually get to be in front of people doing stuff. You know, and, you know, I knew I had to be on my P's and Q's, and I didn't want to F up. But, they basically said, well, you got a good speaking voice and sounds like you got a good set of pipes, so we'll try you out. And, you know, the first show that I ever announced was December the 4th, 2002. So in, like, about a year's time of getting involved with just, you know, helping out, I landed the spot of ring announcer for MCW. And then finally, when MCW finally booked Ruckus, they booked him in a match against Derek Frazier, I announced him one time, and he was like, man, I got to bring you to Philly with me. And I was like, well, what do you mean? He's like, don't you see all these belts I have? Because at the time, Ruckus was like world champion, tag team champion. He was like, he has like all these belts. And it's my first time that I ever met him. And he was like, I'm the champion in CZW. He was like, I need to bring you up there to be my personal ring announcer. And that was basically it. That's how I got involved, really. That's how I got involved and how I landed in CZW. It's all through Ruckus.
Yeah. So that was your entry to CZW as well, huh?
Yep, pretty much. He brought me in as the personal ring announcer of Blackout. I did like a show here and a show there, but nothing consistent. And then when Ed O'Mac got his job being like editor for the magazine or editor, whatever he does for the E right now, that's when Maven contacted me. And Maven was like, we loved what you did when you were coming in with Blackout. We want to know if you want to be full-time. And I guess my first show was right after Cage of Death 9. The January show after Cage of Death 9 was my first show as full-time ring announcer.
Now, what was your thoughts about CZW coming into it? Were you aware of CZW and what they were doing out there beforehand, or was it something that you kind of had to take in as you got there?
I was unaware of this 100%. I didn't know that CZW existed. I knew more about, in MCW they used to use, they still use Adam Flash. So,
right.
And I met the Backseat Boys in MCW as well. And, just in sort of locker room talk, locker room banter, like a lot of the times guys would be coming or going to a CZW show. So I'd heard about it and I knew it was in Philly, but I really didn't know much about it. I think I remember one time, Flash came down and he was just all cut up. His wrists were all like, his arms were all cut up, and he had done something up there. So I knew it was Extreme, but I actually did not know that it was the ECW arena. Like, I remember
right.
the first time that I went there, and I was there and I was taking it all in. It was really, there were like, when I first started announcing for Blackout, that place used to be fucking packed. Like it was scary packed for me. As someone to go out in front of a bunch of people, it was that many people in there, and I was like, wow, this is kind of a big deal, I kind of got introduced to it slowly, gradually, and then I was aware that, whoa, I'm in the ECW arena, and like, this is kind of like a big deal. But no, it was kind of slow, for me to learn exactly who I was involved with, and that this was not just a company calling their belt the world championship. This was a company that actually had their belt defended, around the world, which is, a testament to how, credible a group is, But
right.
for me, all I knew was MCW, Maryland Championship Wrestling. That's all I knew. If it wouldn't have been for them booking Claude, I probably would have never, I wouldn't be talking to you right now, because he's the one who's like, I got to bring you up there with me, so...
Yeah, definitely. That's a great dude. I've known him since, 2001. I started going in February 2001, and
mm-hmm.
he's always been a tremendous dude. And, Stan wanted to ask a question to you. What's up, Stan?
Hey, Larry, from listening to your story, how you got started, I got one follow-up question on it.
Sure.
Very intrigued by this. You said that somebody said, hey, Larry, let's give Larry a shot. And a little off-the-wall question here. Did you just go into that first time the venue had people in it and you walked up, grabbed the mic, and that was the way? Or did you have to, like, audition in front of a couple people first? Like, how did that work? I'm a little I'm interested in it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for my whole life, as long as I can remember, people have always either made fun of or told me that I had a tremendous speaking voice. Now, like, growing up in Catholic school, a lot of kids used to tease me about the way that I talk. And then in addition to that, like, a lot of a lot of people would always want me to, like, read, like, speeches, like, in church, or, like, read speeches, like, at assemblies and stuff like that. So I kind of always had the idea that, like, you know, maybe somewhere down the line Larry was going to use his voice for something, whether it be radio or whatever. So, again, you know, the guy who really got the ball rolling was former ECW referee Jeff Jones. And he was like, you know what? We should put Larry out there. He's got a pretty good speaking voice. And, again, like, I was, like, totally with it. I was really, really excited and totally with it. I basically got all of the sort of things that I needed to say, like commission stuff and, you know, safety, you know, all the safety announcements. I got all of that directly from the ring announcer who was passing the mic to me. But, no, there was no audition whatsoever. Like, the show started off. Jeff Jones, I guess since it was his idea, he came out to do the whole, how's everybody doing, Glenn Burney? You know, and, you know, everyone cheered, and he was like, I've got some bad news. Unfortunately, our former ring announcer, Steve Venturella, blah, 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 he can't be with us anymore, but he has handpicked a protege. It's my pleasure to announce him right now, Larry Kennedy Phillips, Jr. So that was the original name that I had, and Jeff Jones was the one who introduced me as Larry Kennedy Phillips, Jr., and I came into the ring, and I would not shake his hand. So, like, immediately off the bat, they had given me a lot of, like, sort of substance to be just not a ring announcer. And he was like, you know, he visibly in the ring was like, oh, this guy's not going to shake my hand. And then, you know, I basically got on the microphone, and I started doing my job. And as wrestling fans will do, I started getting heckled. And as soon as I started getting heckled, I started giving it right back to the fans, but in a very sort of, not like just all of a sudden going off on the microphone, but just like, you know, saying, and I just want to say, ladies and gentlemen, that I've been doing things for a long time, but it is really a deplorable place to be right now in the middle of Glenn Burney, surrounded by all of you, you know, expletive, da 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 da, and then they immediately right. started reacting like, F this guy, we don't like this guy, and that yeah. was basically it, but there was no audition. I just went out there cold and started doing it. I just watched that tape by accident. I went back to Maryland to see my mom, and I put just an old MCW tape in, and it happened to be the one that was my first ring announcing, professional ring announcing gig ever, and the first wrestler that I ever announced actually was Mike Quackenbush, believe it or not, which is kind of fun to me to find out that the first time that I ever uttered a wrestler's name, it was Quack. You know, that's kind of funny to me. Yeah, so.
Well, speaking of your name, you obviously didn't start out with that. And, you know, the first thing I thought when I heard Larry Legend was the living legend, Larry Zbyszko.
Oh, yeah.
where did you come up with Larry Legend?
Okay, so, all right. So what happened was that, you know, all of us have 9-to-5s. You know, all of us, you know, do work outside of pro wrestling. Well, not all of us. Some of us actually make a living. But me in particular, I used to be the manager of a Starbucks in New York City. And, you know, there was a time, you know, in Starbucks when, you know, we actually as employees could, like, change the music. We could change the music that we were listening to, you know, while serving lattes. And
right.
around the time that the first John Legend CD came out, I was notorious for always going into the back and whatever sort of classical music or, you know, bossa nova or whatever is like typical Starbucks music that is played, I would always dead that and put the John Legend CD on because I thought it was just fantastic. And I was like, this is more like something that we can groove to while we get,
right.
you know, through serving all these drinks. And one day, because I sort of gained a reputation for always putting on the John Legend CD, one day one of my coworkers actually said to me, oh, Larry Legend saves the day. You know, something he said something along those lines. And when he said Larry Legend, those two L's, I was like, you know what? I like the sound of that. And I never really thought about living legend Larry Zbyszko or the original Larry Legend, which is Larry Bird from the Boston Celtics. I never really thought
right.
about those things. I really just thought that Larry Legend sounded really good, and that if I were going to go out there and present myself as Larry Legend, and I got Robbie Marino was insistent that I continued what he christened me Big Larry K for the official ring announcer of Blackout, and that way it was like Black Big Larry K, and I was known as Larry Kennedy Phillips in Maryland Championship Wrestling. So he said, go with Big Larry K. And all of those times that I did announce Blackout, I think it was three times in particular, I was a Big Larry K. But when I finally, you know, was the guy for CZW, I announced myself as Larry Legend. And I think, as now that I remember it, I dressed in regular clothes for that first show, and John almost threw me down the stairs. Zandig was really not happy that I had done that, but I was going into that thing totally blind. And as the personal ring announcer for Blackout, I used to dress in regular clothes. So I was like, I'm going to try this regular clothes thing again, see if I can get away with it. John was like, don't fucking come back from this building unless you have a goddamn suit. And I think he even chopped me in the ring. Like, he came out, grabbed the mic from me, said his piece, and he looked at me and he said, don't come back to this fucking building unless you have a suit. Then he, like, chopped me and, like, put the microphone in my chest.
Yeah, I think that was on camera,
Yeah, so, but, yeah.
Those people were doing Foreman Mills and all of that
stuff. Yeah, that was Foreman Mills. And I think the next show, I came out and I said, well, ladies and gentlemen, I heeded your advice. I went to Foreman Mills and I got myself a suit and everyone popped for it, or there was like kind of a little reaction, and that was basically it, you know. But that's how the Larry Legend name got born. It was by accident, because I was notorious for always going into the back of the Starbucks I used to manage in New York City at the time, and I used to always put on the John Legend CD because I just thought it was way better music to listen to than all of that other stuff. So
that's a pretty unique way of gaining your name.
I think it works. You know, and it can get turned into so many things, like Legendary Larry, Larry's Legend. You know, it's like you can play with that. You know, Legend Larry. There's so many things you can do with it. I like it. I think it cuts glass.
Yeah, it definitely works. During your earlier shot going on with CZW, I remember. I mean, you fumbled a couple of names here and there. I remember around the time of Tournament of Death, I forget what Tournament of Death was.
Oh, my God. It was 7. It was my first Tournament of Death, and I know everything you're going to call me out on.
Devin Storm thing. Devin Storm worked at Tournament of Death, apparently, but...
You know what it was, is I think that right before that was in July, maybe early August, right before that I had done the Shane Shamrock Memorial Cup, and Devin Storm. I'm not making excuses for myself, but Devin Storm.
No, you told me that back then, honestly.
You told me
that day. And I was like, nah, dude, it is cool. I busted your balls, but...
I was calling Drew Blood Drew Payne. I was calling Drew... I was call. I specifically remember announcing Drew Blood as Drew Payne. I was crucified at that one. But you know what the thing is that that Tournament of Death, there was, like, alcohol for days. And, like, you know what? Everyone was so hammered that I think that people were just like, it's all right, don't worry about it. And I didn't really get too much trouble for that. But, yeah, I fucked up a lot back then.
But, I mean, I knew you were good at what you were doing. I was just like, what the fuck? It's Devin Moore. Like, you would actually turn and look at somebody and be like, oh, shit.
I was calling him Devin Storm. Yeah, I remember that. No more. Now he's the notorious 187. No, wait, he's the King of Philly.
There you go.
The Prince of Philly or the King. He's something of Philly. And the CZW World Champion. Yeah, so.
Absolutely.
I don't mess him up anymore, but I think that was
the
first time that I actually.
Notorious Devin Moore, you know.
that's homicide.
I know.
He's just the notorious Devin Moore.
right, absolutely. Well, I mean, back then, you know, that was your first Tournament of Death, as you said. What was your initial, you know, feelings about CZW at Tournament of Death? I mean, you knew it was hardcore, ultra violent, whatever you want to call it, but, I mean, that's a show that definitely enters another realm. I mean, what did you... still standing in the middle of that ring where they were doing what they were doing.
You know what? I have a pretty strong stomach, you know, and I really just didn't want anyone to get hurt. Like a couple of those guys, you know, like Ryan McBride, I think, worked that Tournament of Death, and he you know, I remember Ryan McBride when he was like a security, like in the cage security for MCW shows. So I practically saw him grow up in the wrestling
right.
business. And to see him participating in something like that, I was really, like, kind of, like, worried for him. Another, like, you know, I think Ruckus and Sabian just did a standard tag match that show. But, you know, a lot of the guys I hadn't really developed relationships with. I remember that I was always afraid of Nick Gage and still am to this day. So, like, I wanted to stay as far away from him at that type of event as possible because
right.
I remember back in MCW, there would be a time or two where because I was sort of like a heel ring announcer that I would get my just desserts, you know, to give the fans a nice reaction. And, you know, there's something about being in a kind of like a backyard bar in Delaware and being a black ring announcer that I kind of was like, oh, I better protect my fucking neck. with bottles of Jack Daniels being passed around the crowd, I might want to skedaddle as soon as this damn thing's over or hopefully not make too many fucking mistakes. So, I mean, I was having a good time, though. I always have a good time with what I do, but I guess I was really nervous that no one would really seriously get hurt. But at the end of the day, that was the seventh Tournament of Death, so I figured these guys must know what they're doing, you know,
yeah.
So... But yeah, it wasn't overwhelming. What was more overwhelming, probably was the arena, because like I said, when I first started, the arena used to be packed. Like I remember the first time I went there, I was like, wow, I don't think I've ever seen this many people in here in a building. Or
yeah.
MCW does a show called the Shane Shamrock Memorial Cup every year, and that draws a pretty significant crowd, but. The arena was like, it was hot. I remember the building was always, like, very hot because there were just so many bodies in it. So,
yeah.
You know, that was more overwhelming, and I could say I was more nervous doing shows in the arena than Tournament of Death. I just stayed as far away from the ring as possible, and I remember that main event, the 200 light tubes, I did not get in the ring for that. I was like, I'm not getting in there. Logan started throwing up and stuff from all the light tube,
right,
you know,
that was
stuff.
All weird. Held the dust, yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't scared. Like, if that's what you mean, I wasn't scared. I wasn't nervous. I was nervous for, like, you know, McBride and other guys that I had known. I didn't want
right.
to see anyone get hurt, but it was just, you know, my first outdoor show. I'd never done a show outdoors before, so that was actually kind of fun. And I just, you know, still, you know, a couple months in, I just didn't want to mess up. So, and I did.
Right. what were your some of your favorite matches that you have announced?
Well, you know what? The thing is, I got to tell you one thing. I don't have any favorite matches that I've announced. Like, because a lot of the time, as much as I'm trying to pay attention and, you know, make it, you know, as real as possible, a lot of the times I'm all over the place with getting a lot of things, you know, a lot of instructions. And that's one of the things that I think is one of my strong suites is that I can adapt quickly and I can deal with a lot of audibles, you know, like different things that are like, oh, and don't forget to mention this, or, oh, DJ needs you in the back, or, oh, you know, this,
right.
that, or the other. But what I can tell you is I do have favorite people to announce based on
okay.
the way that I, you know, like I said, I am in love with my voice, but I really like announcing Adam Cole. Like, I don't know what it is about my style of ring announcing, really, that I like announcing him, you know, in any of his matches. I like announcing Devin Moore. I've really started to like announcing Masada recently because, you know, with his entrance music and with his style, I think that the intro that I give him is a perfect complement to what he's about to bring to the ring. So I've actually really started to really dig the way that I announced Masada. And you know what? As a matter of fact, I really felt honored to announce Dick Togo in one of his last U.S. appearances. And I got a chance to review, you know, that International Indie Summit. And, you know, any time that I announce a guy and the streamers come into the ring, it just takes me to a whole nother world. Like, that
right.
is, that's what, if CZW fans are listening right now, you know, whenever we bring those big Japanese names in and you guys go with the tradition of Japanese ring intros, which is so important to someone like me, when those streamers start to settle down over the ring, and it's like you guys throw them perfectly. You throw them perfectly. Like they start to, you know, arc over the ring and slowly descend on the ring at perfect timing to complement my intro for the guy. So I remember that once I got to look at that Dick Togo footage, and once I when I was actually in the ring doing it, I was like, wow, this is really a moment. So, you know, favorite people to announce: Adam Cole, Devin Moore, Masada, any Japanese name when you guys do the streamers, and that's something I only get in CZW. Thank you very much.
Right.
So I do a couple different companies, but only the fans in CZW are that in tune with the tradition, you know, to do something like that. And Ruckus, of course, you know, because Ruckus, you know, is the one who gave me more and more to say, you know, and that's the you know, the reason that I get up there, so I enjoy announcing him too.
All right. Well, I mean, having said that about the matches and this and that, and I do understand that you're very involved in what you have to do, and you may not be actually watching the match or anything like that. Was there any matches that were hyped up that much to the extent that you knew that this was going to be that big of a match? And obviously the Dick Togo match is a good example of that. But you knew that this was going to be such a big match that it was that special for you to be the one introducing the match. Were any of those stood out for you like that?
You know, I got to tell you, and this might be because I'm on the, I guess, inside. You know, at the time, it was my understanding that at TOD 8.5, when Gage fought Zandig, that was going to be, you know, Zandig's last match.
Right.
And I think subsequently he went on to wrestle Brain Damage one more time after that. But I remember that was a big deal to me. And the funny thing is I stayed up real late at night going down, researching all of John's accolades, because I was going to give him a legendary intro. Well,
right.
as I learned at Tournament of Death 8.5, and I learned at that fist fight. Was it called Fist Fight?
Yeah.
Was it CCW Fist Fight?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
As I learned, John, you know, wants to get down to business, and the way that his character is and the way that he approaches matches, it's perfect for him to, like, you know, I think at Fist Fight, I announced Damage, and then he grabbed the mic from me as I started to start doing what I was to do for him at Tournament of Death, and was like, Ultraviolent Icon, John fucking Zandig, and threw the mic at me, and the crowd just erupted, because that's just the presence, you know, that's just the presence that he is, you know? But I remember before Tournament of Death 8.5, I was like, okay, this is going to be John's probably last match, so I want to give him a nice send-off. And then, of course, his music hit, he ran to the ring, and Gage never let me announce him. So, you know, I actually didn't get to say one thing at that match, but I remember that was one where I felt like this is really something special, and I want to give it the brevity that, you know, for CZW, anyway, that this is something pretty big. Also, I know that this is, you know, the CZW, you know, forum, more or less, your show, but
well,
you know, taking that trip to Atlanta this past was it this year? Yeah, it was this year for Dragon Gate USA.
Okay.
Was a big moment for me, and I didn't know anything that was going to happen with those matches, which is probably better, so it can be more realistic when I react, you can hear it in my voice. I didn't know anything that was going to happen in those matches, but I knew being in Atlanta the same weekend and doing a show the same day as WrestleMania, like that really felt like something. Like I knew that there were people that were watching me that were then going to go right to, you know, wherever WrestleMania was, and it was like, wow, it's like I opened for WrestleMania. That's kind of how it felt to me. Like, you know, like,
yeah.
I mean, the quality of athlete for Dragon Gate USA, you know, I'm going to reserve my judgment there, you know, but, you know, we did our show before, you know, WrestleMania, and that just was a tremendous feeling to be a part of that. So that was one that just overall show, Mercury Rising. That actually Mercury Rising was the night before. I forget what the name of the show was that Sunday. But and lastly, Moxley's last match in New York City against Austin Aries for Evolve. That was a big one too. I remember that was a big one because we all knew Mox was going. We all knew that this was probably going to be one of his last stands. So even more than whatever he did the last time he was in Philly, I think he was just like on the outside of the ring for Philly's Most Wanted or Ego or something like that. You know, when I did his announcement at BB King's for Evolve, that was a big deal too. So
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Another question. What happened to the ultraviolent do-rag?
I gave it to a little girl. There's a guy, naturally, Larry Legend gives it to a little girl. There was a little girl who came to, I guess, 8 and 8.5, or I don't even remember the last time I wore it. But anyway, whatever the case may be, she gave me a bracelet, okay? Now, she gave me a bracelet that was basically a bunch of paper clips that she had strung together, and it was a rainbow bracelet. So she kind of was giving me a little, like, wink, wink, you know, in her own little way. And I was like, this is awesome. I was like, this is awesome. This goes right with Larry Legend. Thank you so much. And you know what? Something just, you know, made me give her that at the end of the show so that she could go away with something. And her dad has come to Cage of Death, Tournaments of Death since then, but she's never been back. But I gave it to a little girl that was in the front row. I forget which Tournament of Death it was, but if you look there, she's a black girl, and she was there with, like, her brother. They were right on the corner, like, right when you come out. And the whole day I had been sort of joking around with her and, you know, whatever, and she gave me the little bracelet. And at the end of the Tournament of Death, I just gave her the black and yellow do-rag. I'll get another one.
All right.
Yeah.
That was a tradition for a while.
People get a kick out of that, yeah.
Yeah. Only comes out on them shows, you know, the
Tournament of Death. Only for the Tournament of Death. Yeah, man. Only for the Tournament of Death, you do the ultraviolet do-rag.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What was I going to ask? You've announced a couple different things since, you know, your entrance into CZW. Recently, I seen you announce a show with no mic.
You know what it was? Let's see. Well, there's been a couple times. It's been a couple times, actually. The first time that I did an entire show with no mic was when we did that show in Kingsborough, Massachusetts, CZW. And I always tell this story, and I joke. And I'm going to tell it right now just because I get a kick out of it. I get to the venue, and I go up to my boss, DJ Hyatt, and I say, DJ, where's the mic? And he looks at me and he goes, oh, you fancy, huh? He didn't really say that, but that song had just come out at the time, so it was really gaining popularity. So, but no, for whatever reason, they didn't bring a mic. We didn't bring a mic with us, so DJ was like, you'll just have to go out there and do it with no mic. And the best part about that is that not only did I ring announce, but then he was like, can you do commentary too? So I was literally, like, going into the ring, ring announcing with no mic, then going and joining MLJ at the booth and commentating. And I think a lot of the times, I've never seen that show in its entirety. I think a lot of the times, I'm, like, just over by the commentator's booth announcing whoever the winner is. And
the commentator.
Yeah, I tweeted a video not too long ago for a company up here called NYWC where the batteries just died on the microphone, so I just had to do it full voice. And we got new batteries, and I was able to finish the rest of the show with the mic. But, yeah, I mean, you know, it's all about your diaphragm, like a lot of the same training that a singer has. You know, like I know those things, and I know that as much as, you know, adding the treble to a lot of my announcements is a good thing.
Right.
At the same time, like by the end of it, I'm really using a lot of the lower registry of my voice and it being supported by the diaphragm, you know, so I can do it. I don't like doing it, and I think that I should probably get paid more for times like when I have to do it like that, but, you know, it's...
Yeah, minus the mic plus the paycheck, yeah.
Yeah, if I was doing it for the money, I wouldn't be doing it, so, you know, it's like, you know, so... Yeah, that's been a handful of times that the mic has gone out on me, and I've just had to use the full voice, and I don't like those times, but it always is a reaffirming thing to me that, hey, you can't go around calling yourself Larry Legend unless you do it like a real living legend. And I like those moments, and they sort of like, they have me believe in my own shit, you know? Like, so yeah. I'm not asking and I'm not wishing it on myself, but when that does happen, I go with it.
All right. Well, speaking of DJ, and, you know, you had mentioned Zandig earlier, what do you feel the difference between working for a DJ and working with Zandig is?
Easy. Everybody is and was afraid of John Zandig.
Uh-huh.
Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, he is a very intimidating, legitimate, I will punch you in the face type guy. Like, there's nothing but realness there. So
yeah.
when I first came with Claude or Ruckus to do the blackout thing, I remember Ruckus brought me up to John, and he was like, "Yeah, this is that guy I was telling you about, Larry. He's going to ring announce blackout from now on." And John looked down at me, and then he looked at Ruckus, and then he looked back at me. I didn't say a word, and he was like, "You really want to get involved in this shit?" And I was like, "Yes, sir, I do." And then he just like looked at me, and he like walked away. But that's the type of respect that he commands, just in the way that he carries himself and the way that he is. Like, DJ is, I don't look at him that way, and I don't think I ever will. Like, he doesn't intimidate me the way that John does, and maybe that's just because I've known him. Like, I've seen him come up through the ranks of barrel and wrestling, you know. So to me, he's DJ. You know, he just happens to be my boss now. But one thing that I'll never be is like, I'll never be like afraid to piss him off, and that's why I almost got fired. I'll reveal this. I almost got fired from CZW for taking too much like footage on, you know, my personal devices and then like beaming them out there. You know, so but
yeah, I heard you got crazy with the iPad.
Exactly, and you know what the thing is? If John were the boss, I would have never done it. I would have never done it for fear that he would have punched me in the face or thrown, you know, the iPad across the arena or done something. Not to say that I think he's a loose cannon or a violent individual, you know, or not like a, you know, not a good man, but like there's just something about him that's just like, I'm not crossing this guy's path. I don't want to get on anything to do on his bad side, whereas DJ is like just more of, DJ's more of a peer. He's more of a peer of mine as opposed to like, you know, like I'm this guy can fuck me up. So that's basically it. And I think I don't want to speak for everyone else, but I feel like that in a lot of ways, a lot of guys respected John in different ways than they respect DJ. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that he's like, you know, he's just that guy, you know?
Yeah. Well, recently, I mean, speaking of DJ and this and that, recently became quite a part of the Indie Summit match that DJ had with Dan Sciocodino. What was your thoughts on that?
I'm all for it. You know the part of Larry Legend that, you know, in a lot of ways CZW has embraced, you know, there's a part of my character. There's a part of me that's extra legendary, so to speak. And, you know, both one thing I'll say about both DJ and John Zandig is that they both were really into that. They thought it was, they both think it's very, very funny, you know, and they both are all for it and ways of incorporating it into the show for entertainment, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think the first thing that I ever did for CZW other than ring announcing was John wanted me to do the vignette with Cole Calloway in the back where Gage destroys him, you know, and I take off for the hills. So, you know, DJ told me, you know, we're going to bring in Dino and, you know, he's the G-A-Y anal champion, you know, over there. So, you know, the type of things that he does and, you know, working with this men's club. We were doing the Men's Club USA. So I had been doing, you know, a little research on my own to see what I was getting myself into. And, you know, it's all in good fun, you know. And, you know, Dino treated me with nothing but respect. I am I'm a real company line type individual. So if I work for you and I believe in what your ideas are, I'll get behind them and I'll do them 100%. But if it's ever
right.
something that I'm like, well, what the fuck are we doing this for? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it was the opener. Everyone wanted to have a good time. I wanted to have a good time. And that's exactly what we did. You know, like, I didn't really – if DJ would have wanted to do something that was like, okay, and then – you remember when Thumbtack Jack made him perform fellatio on the dildo?
Right, right.
Yeah, that's a little like – I'm like, what the F? You know, like, even me, I'm like, what is going on here? What
right.
you know, why would you do that? Like, something like that, I'd be like, okay, I don't get it. But the rope-a-dope sort of Terry Funk style, you know, and then he goes into you know. I was like, come on, yeah, that'll be fun, you know. And it seemed like everyone
yeah.
was having a good time, you know. So I was fine with that.
Yeah, I thought Dino did it, the gimmick really, really great. Honestly,
yeah,
I'm
sorry, guys, that's off a lot.
Nah, I've never been the biggest fan of the gay gimmick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has its place in this and that, you know, and it's fine. But I thought Dino did it to perfection. I mean, he really did it to the point where, I mean, you had to either think it was funny or, you know, some of the front row fans are almost climbing over the second row just to try to get out of his way. And, I mean, it just, he really did, like, a tremendous job with it. And I was all for
it.
Stan saw my case about it, but, you know.
it's like deathmatch wrestling. It can be done well. A lot of people
yeah.
don't realize that. Like, you can do a death match well, or you can do garbage wrestling. Just like the
right.
gay gimmick. You can do it well, or you can just do it just for the sake that you're doing it. And you're right. You know, masterfully does it. He doesn't do it, like, all willy-nilly. Even from the way that he enters, you know, with the, water bottle, you know, and then he just pops his load right at the entrance way. It's like little things like that, you know, to let you know what you're in store for, what this guy's going to be all about. Those are masters at work. So, yeah, I really have a new admiration for him, not just because we made out, but I have a new admiration for him, you know, and hopefully, you know, I would love to someday get over there and do one of his shows. But,
right.
you know, I don't know what the future is for that, you know, for anything really, because, you know, there, you know, as far as being an employee of CZW, I'm really kept in the dark about a lot of stuff. So I don't know what the plan is going to be after January. I don't know if we're going to tour. I don't know if we're going to move to that rec center that's, you know, up the way, or what the plan is going to be for CZW. I'm sure we're still going to do our trips over to, you know, England and Germany and Japan, but it's really up in the air where the men's club is. It seems like things are progressing, but at the same time, a lot of the intel that I get the day of. You know, I'm never really sort
right.
of, like, debriefed. And I think that has a lot to do with the fact that I'm in New York. Like, I think if I lived in Philly and I could be closer to, you know, the home base, like, I could have more of a role in sort of, like, you know, putting it all together and sort of having input. But as it is right now, like I said, if you hire me and I'm working for you, I'm company line, and you know what, I'll go with it if it makes sense and everyone's going to have a good laugh. So, and I think everyone was greatly entertained by that
right.
little exchange. So,
sure. Here's something I want to ask you, because now, I mean, you're on the other side of, you know, the where you would be able to speak from your opinion, I could speak from my opinion, but the men's club thing, I know you're not the booker, you're not the person who is storylining it to whatever it's supposed to mean, and I also am aware of the, you know, Japan side of it with men's Teo and all of that stuff.
Right.
But in the South Philly crowd, what do you think, or what was supposed to become of the men's club? Because in my opinion, I mean, in a South Philly crowd, the hostile South Philly CZW bloodthirsty crowd, I don't think that a gay gimmick can come over as a complete face gimmick because of, I mean, just the nature of the fans. And
well,
then at the same token,
guys,
to come over as a heel, I mean, it's pretty much just opening the door to just open gay bashing, and I don't think that's the way to go either. What
you know
was
what?
The goal?
I, you know what? I'm glad you bring this up. because there is a fan, Jacqueline Crimson, who really, she sits in the front row, red hair, and she was really offended by the introduction of the men's club and what it potentially could do for, you know, individuals that actually have that lifestyle. And
right.
to have us being portrayed in sort of like a comedic fashion where we're always getting beat up or just always thinking about, you know, doing gay shit.
Right.
But I almost feel like that, you know, and I'm really not tooting my own horn here, but I feel like that by aligning me with the men's club and, you know, my popularity with the South Philly band, that maybe they thought that that would possibly take away some of the heat. Like, oh, Larry's with them. We love Larry and Juicy Hot Dogs, so, yeah, these guys are okay. But as we were actually doing it, and I was feeling the vibe from the crowd, I was like, wow, this is going to be really tough. And I actually started thinking in my head, well, wow, what if they actually start getting so sick of this that they kind of start getting sick of me? You know, those thoughts were running through my mind because, like, I feel like, quite frankly, I have a good thing going for me with the Philly crowd. And
right.
I love you guys, and you guys show me a lot of love, and I don't want anything to jeopardize that. But at the same time, it's not all about me. So
right.
I'm a real big fan of Cole Calloway.
Sure.
I think that he does the gay gimmick really well. He gets a lot of heat. Men, but kids love them. Like, kids are really into that, like, fairy, you know, and that's what he is. So anything to get him back into CZW in some sort of role, I was all for. And then, again, with it not being all about me at the end of the day, I'm a real big fan of Niles Young. And believe it or not, Niles was involved in the first match that I ever announced in the arena. It was him and Derek Frazier versus, I think, Ruckus and Human Tornado. So, you know, I wouldn't be anywhere right now without Claude Ruckus being like, you know, I want to build this guy up and have him be a part of something. So because I was brought up that way, that's really ingrained in who I am, and to see us all be successful, I was willing to go with it. But I'm not going to lie and say that, you know, with Men's Club and with the South Philly fan and with the way it felt when we first launched that that angle, and I was kind of like, well, I hope we can keep this thing afloat and people can have a good time to the point that they're not like, oh, fuck Larry. All he wants to do is, like, blow guys and turn everybody gay, you know. And the fact that they were calling me the official spokesperson of Men's Club USA, I felt kind of like sort of had me dual-wielding my roles, official CZW ring announcer and official spokesperson for Men's Club USA. So, you know, it crossed my mind, but at the same time, I'm a real big fan of Cole. I'm a real big fan of Niles, and, you know, at the end of the day, it's all something for you guys to digest. If you like it, you like it. If you don't, you don't. We'll move on. But it really hasn't been talked about as much anymore. There certainly hasn't been there for months. I don't even remember the last time he was there. It may have been Tangled Web, you know. Cole hasn't been there for months, and even my you know, ring boy Paris, he hasn't been there for months, and you know, Niles is still. Finally got released from the closet. You know, he finally got out of that closet at Cagey Death. But you know, I don't know what's going on with that. But you know, people ask me, people bring it up, like, hey, what happened to Men's Club? So I guess people are interested, and I would love to keep running with that. But like I said, I really am not in on that type of you know, activity. It's just like, you know, here's what we're doing. You okay with that? Sure, let's do it.
Right. That was my big worry with it was, like you said, you didn't know which direction it was going to go. And if it went too far heel and stuff like that, although I'm sure you could take it and run with it and this type of stuff, to segue off of whatever angle that you guys were running that would really, you know, get over, you know, if it was in a heel direction, you get a lot of heat. And then, okay, here's our main event, and we're going to do all the stuff you wanted to see. It, now they're screaming at you where someone's trying to, you know. So
well,
that was
like I said, one thing about John and DJ, and maybe even DJ a little bit more, but, you know, they really find that sort of like silly gay shit funny. You know, they find it, it's really, like, I remember distinctly John, I can remember him, like, just laughing his ass off up top on the Eagle's Nest when he would, like, where he would observe the shows when I would do little things with Cole and, you know, we'd get chased out of the ring, like, so he really liked it, and I know that DJ also thinks that that type of, you know, ha-ha is really, you know, a necessary component of what we do. But you know, it's at the end of the day, it's about you guys and you guys having a good time, and you know, I'll do whatever I'm asked to do within reason. You know, but I had a good time doing that stuff, and I think I would be able to recover, you know, from it, and also be able to walk that fine line of, oh God, he's associated with these clowns, but then at the same time, it's Larry, you know, so
right.
Like I was okay with it.
I hear you.
What I really want to do is I want to go to Japan. You know, I would like to be on a tour of Japan, and you know, in a lot of ways, I'll reveal this. You know, I basically at this Indie Summit thing was able to sort of showcase what it is that I bring to the table to a lot of people that make a lot of decisions over there for Big Japan Wrestling. So it was very important to me that I got my names and my pronunciations and just brought to the table what it is that I bring to the table, because, you know, they ring announcing is important to them. It's not, it can't just be like a friend of the promoter who has a suit. It has to be someone who can convey how much weight, you know, is in a match like Ito Ryuji versus Masada. You know, this is
right.
A big thing, you know. So in a lot of ways, you know, making the decision to run with the men's club and do things with Dino, it's like, I want to be in the good graces and be someone that can bring not just my ring announcing to the table, but also sort of like character and entertainment, to the point that they're like, you know what, even though, you know, we want to have a good, you know, Black Cheese match or a good, you know, Danny Havoc or Drake Younger match on our show in Japan, you know, maybe one time, they'll be like, yeah, we want that ring announcer too. Bring him over here because he's good. He's good enough, you know. And that would be a huge moment for me, and something that, in a lot of ways, being associated with CZW, I hope the door opens for me to make a trip to the land of the rising sun and you know, do what I do over there. So,
right.
You know, we'll see.
Another venture you've been involved in is Urban Wrestling Federation.
Oh, yeah.
What can you tell us about that?
You're not a fan of that, are you?
No, sir.
Yeah, I know.
But what can you tell us about it?
Yeah. Well, you know what? I guess, you know, guys, everything comes with Larry Legend. Everything comes from Ruckus, okay? Pretty much everything. and he is the one that was contacted first, and immediately upon negotiating his deal to be involved with it, he was like, and who are you guys have announcing this thing? And they were like, oh, well, we hadn't even gotten to that point. And he was like, oh, you got to get Larry Legend. And they were like, well, who's that? And he was like, he's the CZW announcer, and he's fucking awesome. And from there, the ball got rolling with them contacting me, and they were very adamant about me not being Larry Legend, as in tuxedo wearing,
right.
You know, and now, ladies and gentlemen, for the introductions. They were very big on, you can't be that way. You've got to be, you know, more hood. You've got to be more street.
I saw the fucking initial promo for that, I laughed my ass off, honestly.
Yeah, I was, and you know,
was
all
like,
I was doing.
Dog, here's what's going
all,
down, son. Like,
all I was
oh,
doing
Jesus.
Was, I was taking words that were written for me that, believe it or not, actually sounded whiter than when I was saying it for the promo, and
yes.
Just like, you know, just doing it way over the top of no real way that, like, you know, black people act, but like, you know, almost like how Steve Austin said, I'll just turn it up like to level 10, you know, that's
right.
All that was. And I don't have anything bad to say about Urban Wrestling Federation or what they want to do with what I call the urban legend, but
right,
you know,
right.
It's national pay-per-view. You know, and that's not anything that I've ever, at this point in my career, been able to say that I've got underneath my belt. So,
yeah.
You know, as big as the Dragon Gate thing was, going to Atlanta the same week as WrestleMania and being around, you know, this type of fan and this type of quality athlete and being the guy in the middle to sort of, you know, anchor, you know, all of the communicable information, it was
right.
also a big deal for me to be in the Hammerstein Ballroom because I've never done a show there. So, like,
yeah.
with that on the table and with the level of production on the table, and I'm not going to lie at all, and with the money
right.
that, you know, is behind this whole machine that is the Urban Wrestling Federation, I was like, yeah, I'm on board, and, you know, I'll see where this thing goes. And so far, it's been pretty fun. You know, it's like it's not that I don't put my all into Urban Wrestling Federation, but Urban Wrestling Federation, to me, is like a layup because it's not traditional. And because it's not traditional, it gives me more room to just, like, you know, go out there and fuck around. Whereas
right.
with CZW, I want to give that, you know, the legendary, you know, this is an event that you're at, this is the formula, the blueprint, and we're going to go from beginning, middle to end. Urban Wrestling Federation is like, it's like, if I don't know if this will make any sense, but it's like straight TV. We are
right.
producing 100% TV. There's a lot of, if you've ever attended one of the shows that are filmed for pay-per-view, there's a lot of like standing around and waiting. There's like no like real ebb and flow to like, oh, and here comes the beginning, the middle, and now we're at the end. It's not
right.
like that. It's sort of like, okay, and we're going to do this segment now. Okay, we got to shoot that again. Okay. All right. And we're, like when we did The Wrestler. You remember when The Wrestler went
that night?
That
was the fucking worst show I've ever attended. If you see me at the end of the show and they ran up with the cameras, they skip right over me because I was sitting there yawning and just looking at them
yeah.
like, fuck out my face, man.
It's like that. That's what urban wrestling shows feel like.
You never
can
that check.
Yeah, it's straight TV. You know, so there's a lot of sort of like, you know, keeping my energy high, you know, riding the wave of momentum that I usually do for a traditional wrestling show. It's tough. And at some level, you know, I'm told, great job. You're doing everything that we want you to do. Awesome. You know, da 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 da. You know, so I just keep on rolling with the punches with that, and I'm actually going to be doing some work with them tomorrow. I wanted to go check out Ring of Honor because it's
great.
In New York, but I got money to make, so it's I'll be doing something with Urban Wrestling tomorrow to get ready for that next pay-per-view that they're going to be airing. But it all comes from Ruckus. Ruckus is my guru, my mentor, my, you know, he just is pretty much, you can trace everything that I've done in the wrestling business, with the exception of actually getting involved with MCW, it all stems directly from, you know, Ruckus being like, this is the guy, you got to book this guy, have you heard of this guy, you know, so, you know, Urban Wrestling Federation is just another venue. He wasn't the first person who mentioned it to me. Someone else mentioned it to me. It was EC Negro from the Dirty Rotten Scoundrels was the one who mentioned
right.
it to me, that he heard about this thing that was about to start, but Ruckus was the one who got a call placed to find out if I would be
right.
willing to do this and be able to do it. And so far, so good. So we'll see how far it goes. You know, so far,
yeah.
you know, we're on to our fourth pay-per-view. So I'm liking it. Four times the national pay-per-view. I'll take it.
Oh, definitely. And hey,
yeah.
man, for exposure and, you know, the money and all that, I don't blame any one of you. I obviously have my criticism as a fan, but that's, it only goes as far as it goes, man. I've been turned around quite a bit of times on something I wasn't behind to begin with, and then it, you know, came around on me. But who knows? You know, if you're getting paid, I can't hate you for it. And if you get exposure, I can't hate you for that. So
No. I mean, it's like, and also I'm getting an opportunity to work with a lot of, you know, close friends of mine, like the referee D. Edwards.
who used to be a CZW referee, you know, a while back. He had dreads back then, but with Dean...
That Aaron Vaughn, I'm a referee.
Referee, yeah. And we should bring him back. I love Derek, man, and you know, doing a show with him, I've come up for the... I've been doing this since 2002. He's been involved with the majority of the shows that I've ever done, so being in New York with him and, you know, the Ghetto Mafia, they're also two MCW right. mainstays, you know, Ruckus, of course, Robbie, Sean Cradle. Those are all guys that I've done numerous shows with, and it really feels great to be doing something where we're all making a nice amount of money to do what it is that we're doing, you know, and you know, to have that opportunity, it's great to like not be around guys that I don't know, but to be around guys that I've been working hard with for years, and then to see us kind of get a little bone. So, you know, I'm liking that, you know. So
definitely good stuff. One thing we definitely want to get out of you, Larry, is we need a legendary Yakuza Kick introduction.
You want a legendary Yakuza Kick radio introduction?
Yes, we do.
All right.
Anytime you're ready.
What? I mean, is there any sort of criteria that you want me to mention in particular? Like,
I mean, obviously, you know, I'm the host, and you know, Eric's the co-host, and the name of the show is Yakuza Kick Radio, and that's pretty much it. And you do what you do.
Eric Williams.
Eric Williams.
Yeah. All right.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for the introduction. Hosted by J-Cat Morris and Eric Williams, you are now listening to Yakuza Kick Radio.
That's awesome.
awesome.
Good enough?
Awesome. Any last-minute questions out of Stan, Eric? Before we let Larry on this?
I'm good. I'm cool.
Stan?
Stan?
Yes. Oh, Stan might have fell asleep. Sure.
All right.
Yeah. Well, man, you know, thanks for coming on, Larry, man. You got anything to plug before you get off?
I mean, everybody go see CZW. What is it, An Excellent Adventure, or is it Excellent Adventure, or...
Something along with Excellent Adventure, yes.
Yeah, go see that show, because it will probably be the last CZW show in the former ECW Arena, now the CZW Arena, also known as the Asylum Arena. Please go see that show. I wish that I could be there, but I've got another engagement that night. It's not the second Saturday of the month. So, you know, my schedule gets kind of filled quickly, and I already had made a commitment to someone else, and I'm gonna do something else on January the 14th. But guys, please go to that show, because you know, I was just listening to something. I think it was Tommy Dreamer was doing a shoot with Terry Funk, and he was just talking about the signature fans of South Philadelphia. Like the fans that are like no other fans anywhere. And I can say that because I've been a couple places, but there are no other fans like the fans that are in that venue. So please, everybody, pack that place just like you would for a Cage of Death, so that we can just close that bad boy out with a bang and really sort of cement the fact that even though there were a lot of different things that happened in that place's soul was professional wrestling, and the soul of professional wrestling is really in the fans. You know, without you guys, it just won't work. So I guess all I can plug is that last CZW show. I wish I could be there. I really, really do. But it just, like I said, if there's one show that I could feel good about hanging my microphone up on, it would be Cage of Death 13 and the Indie Summit, you know, because I felt like that I did you know, a real quality job, all things considered, with doing the afternoon show and the evening show. And, you know, if that's my exit from the arena, then that'll just be my exit from the arena. On to the next one, as Jay-Z says. But you guys that really have been instrumental in making that building what it is,
please, everyone, go see that show, pack that building, and, you know, hopefully when the cameras stop rolling, the last thing you'll hear is everyone just chanting CZW, CZW, because that'll bring a smile to my face even though I can't be there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And thanks for having me on. I feel like, you know, I really wanted to be on because I'm not going to be at the next show. And I've never been on this show. I've been, in the chat room a lot, but I've never been on this show. So I really want to thank you guys for – did I say some words about Verdi?
No, you did not.
That wasn't your show? Okay. I remember there was one other time that I jumped on a radio show, and I think it was very shortly after someone had passed away. It's terrible. I can't remember who it was, but yeah, I'd never been on the show, so I think that this is just right. All is right with the world. If you know, CZW is going to be leaving the hallowed ground of the arena, and I can be, you know, a guest on Yakuza Kick Radio. So I really appreciate this, and
awesome.
I really thank you guys for having me.
Not a problem. You're welcome anytime, Larry.
Yeah, thank you, buddy.
Yeah, man.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. Yep.
Keep doing what you're doing out there, and we'll see you at the show, man.
All right, brother. Good speaking with you, and you guys keep doing what you're doing because, I mean, you know, it takes a lot to, like, do something and just follow through. You know, even Ego, he was doing his Fridays with Egos, and then he kind of fell off with that, and I was doing my Sunday Tea with Larry Legend, and then I kind of fell off with that. But this, you know, the social networking and sort of the Internet, we already know what it is, so you guys keep doing what you're doing, too, and giving people something to listen to and
have
enjoy.
Have yourself a Merry Christmas extravaganza out there.
I certainly will, and you as well, you and your family.
Absolutely.
All right.
Thanks
guys.
Good night.
Good night.
Later.
Bye.
Yeah, so that was Larry Legend, and phenomenal guest. Just great. Stan, I don't know what happened to Stan. You know? He pulled an Eric tonight.
Except no snoring. Okay. No snoring.
No snoring. There's no muted, no nothing. I don't know. Anyway, I thought it was a great show. We put on quite the Christmas extravaganza for you guys.
Wait, real quick, we have a Ring of Honor card to go over.
Oh, Jesus Christ. We don't have much time. I don't want to get cut off.
Oh, no, we're fine.
We'll get
I'll get this in. We have 12 minutes.
No, but I gotta play outros. So, hurry. Run. Hurry.
Real quick show. All right, so we basically have... I'm going to give the main event. Fuck it.
Okay.
Check out ringofhonorwrestling.com for more
information. Eddie Edwards, Davey Richards.
That's the main event, baby. That's all you gotta, all you care about. Next week on the show, I'll have the whole, you know, pay-per-view rundown, everything, you know.
Yeah.
It's like a regular CZW show, blah, blah, blah. I'll just be going nuts on that shit next week.
Yeah, so that is the shit. I think to play this show out, I'm going to end this with two things. The second one, you'll know what the deal is. The first one, this is some Christmas carols. And this is, let me see. Well, before that, yeah, I got to shout out my guys over there at the Wrestling Soup. I got to, you know.
Mish?
Yeah, Mish, Joey, the whole shit. They did their show tonight. I'm sure it was off the hook. Can't wait to fucking download it and listen to it. Check out my dude John Gray over there, The Real Side of Wrestling. And, yeah, everybody else, Stan, who I don't know where the fuck he at, but that dude did his job. He did a great
awesome,
thing tonight.
Like always.
Yeah, man. We're going to keep putting it on. Merry Christmas to everybody.
Yeah, you too, man.
Yeah, check you motherfuckers out next week. And here goes Matilda the Hun and Mountain Fiji singing you a little bit of Christmas carols. Then I'll hit you with some Ludacris, followed by our little outro, so... Merry Christmas, motherfuckers.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Glow tidings to bring wherever you are. Glow tidings for Christmas and a Happy New
and 12.
That's right. We're coming. We'll
we're
be coming.
Coming
to your town. So be ready. Right, Matilda?
That's right. We're gonna be out there kicking ass, taking names, even if it's in a lamb down position.
jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
Hey!
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
Woo!
Woo! A little kiss. Mwah!
Come Santa Claus, come Santa Claus, down Santa Claus
Tread, tread, Claus.
His reindeer, his reindeer, the
Norman Tread, tread, Claus.
Bells are ringing, children sing. Bells are ringing, children sing. Bells are ringing, children sing. Santa Claus comes tonight.
Yeah, I tell them all I want for Christmas is two gold front teeth and 10 karat diamonds on a fat gold wreath that I can wear around my neck. Get money and respect. Tell Santa Claus to bring a $10 million check so I can spread a little cheer. Fly a couple ears, eat a little chicken, drink a couple beers, kick back and just chill like a player would do. Remix all the Christmas carols and I'll play them for you. Luda, turn it up until I wake up all the neighbors. They say that I'm a nuisance, but I say they all some haters. Just because I'm poor, they always calling me a faker. And cause my Christmas tree's decorated in toilet paper. But little do they know, they about to see a show. Cause when they come up out the house, I'm gonna blast them with some snow. Frosty's never seen nothing quite like this. And St. Nick's never seen nothing quite like Chris. So,
come Santa Claus, come Santa Claus, down Santa Claus.
Tread, 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 Claus. Nuts roasting on the fire in the hills. But down below we firing up the barbecue grills. Ice skating in the driveway, I'ma do it my way. Eggnog got daddy swerving on the highway. Chains on the tires, ice up on the windows. 10 degrees Fahrenheit freezing as the wind blow. Help me take my boots off and my snowsuit off. Get up in the house and my nose is redder than Rudolph's. I think I need some help with the buckle on my belt. And if Santa doesn't show, I want his cookies and his milk. Tell him I need a jacket, new Jordans and an Xbox, new suits for church and a couple pairs of dress socks. Stuff my stocking with Jolly Ranchers and candy canes. Invite my aunties and uncles, let's do the family thing. Meanwhile, I'm hoping Santa got my wish list so I can wake up to a very Merry Christmas.
Come Santa Claus.
And the jingle bells rock. Santa never seems to jingle bells on my block. I hear he's making that list, checking the thing twice. I guess it's probably cause I've been naughty, not nice. But I'ma straighten up my act, get up on track, make a couple bucks and buy mama a Cadillac. And then maybe Santa Claus will come around my way, so all the kids on my block can look up and say, hey,
come Santa Claus.
But you go to the back, and you tell your boss that there's a new Yakuza in town. And it's Yakuza Kick Radio, and we're taking over.
We're taking over.